Awesome.
You're early.
Perfect. I'm going to call to order a regular meeting for the Grover Beach City Council on Tuesday, September 6, 2016. And rather than doing a moment of silence tonight, what I would like to do is do some reflections. I do want to send well wishes from the council to former council member and Mayor Pro Tem Bill Nichols, and I know he and Barbara, he's had a medical procedure and is recovering and very well, but we want to let them know our thoughts and prayers are with them. Anyone else have any thoughts or wishes or reflections you want to put out there tonight?
So I'd like to just a moment of condolence for the woman who passed away last week after Stone Soup.
Yes.
And wish their family the thoughts and prayers of our hearts.
Thank you, Mayor Pro Tem. That's very good. Okay, please stand with us for our flag salute tonight. And seeing as the students are, no one was available since they're back in school, Chief Lieberman, will you lead us in the pledge this evening?
My pleasure. Hand over your heart, please. Ready? Begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Chief. Donna, when you're ready, roll call.
Here.
Here.
Here. Thank you, Donna. Let's see. City Attorney, do we have any closed session announcements tonight?
There are no closed session announcements tonight, and we'll announce the closed session for tonight at the end of the meeting.
Very good. Thank you, sir. At this point, the council will review the order of the agenda as presented by staff and determine if we want to make any changes to the order of business as presented by staff. Do any members of the council want to change the order of the agenda?
I would suggest that, or move, that we take item 8 and move that maybe to the beginning.
You're thinking of moving that? How about we move it to... You want to move this above item 1? Are we good moving this item, City Attorney, above the public hearing? I know that sometimes we're sensitive about people and their time.
Absolutely.
Okay, very good. Okay.
And I would second that motion.
Okay, so are there any other items that we want to change the order? If not, there's a motion to move item 8, which is appointments of the Park Recreation and Beautification Commission, to just ahead item number 1. And so there's a motion, there's a second. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? None. Motion carries. So we will take item number 8 first tonight, but we are first going to do public communication. So if there's anyone that would like to address the council for a period not to exceed 3 minutes on any item within the jurisdiction of this council, this is your opportunity to speak on anything that is not on the agenda. If there is an item you want to speak to that is on the agenda, I will give you an opportunity to speak at that time. So let's do public communications. Ms. Pecker, you have the podium.
Honorable Mayor and City Council members, I just wanted to remind you and members of the audience and people watching from home that this Sunday is our September 11th ceremony, or 9/11. We will be holding a memorial art show all day Saturday and Sunday, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. and 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. on Sunday. We will have the memorial ceremony actually on Sunday at 10:30 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. So we would be happy to have you all attend, and it's free, and we will have light refreshments afterwards, so we hope you all can join us. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Ms. Patker. Let's see. I have 2 speaker request forms in public comment. Brenda Auer.
Good evening, council members. I want to first personally thank everyone who has helped with Highway 1 adopt a highway trash pickup for the last 14 years. Especially want to thank Friends of Grover Beach and the Kiwanis. Larry Connor's here today, and he's been my go-to, not to divert, but I didn't know he was going to be here. I asked people to help, and they asked what I did wrong. And for the last 14 years, he says, Brenda, we need to go pick up the trash. So I appreciate everything you've done to help me. And I know that he helps a lot around town with volunteer work with cleaning up. It's picking up tourist trash is just not a fun job, and I appreciate everyone's volunteer help. Miss Anita, you amaze me if you happen to be, or someone hears this that can tell her. She's always there for all the events, and what she does is, with her great attitude, is just wonderful. I love the Central Coast, and I'm proud to live in Grover Beach. I'm very happy to finally see our streets being taken care of. My main concern this evening is with safety and productivity. School's been in session now for the last 3 weeks, and there are still no crosswalks at Grover Heights Elementary. I can see that they are in the works, although this is a project that really should have been done in the summer, not at the beginning of school, and it's left a very unsafe condition. I know Miss Debbie and all the other crossing guards work very diligently and won't complain, but it's really, until we get those crosswalks in, we should have an officer there in the morning and in the afternoon. It's very dangerous. I would say, you know, to ask you please, let's start putting our residents' safety first. Take a poll. Ask how many drivers drive on the wrong side of bad streets to avoid damage to their vehicles. Ask your neighbors. Ask people in the grocery store. These are the streets that we need to really address and fix first. It's obvious that our town, that the city has neglected to coordinate the street projects such as Measure K, the gas and water grants, to their best use. Streets that were in need of repair have been torn up for water lines with nothing on the agenda of Measure K to go back and repair right away. These streets were in bad shape already, and with all the massive numbers of heavy equipment being used on them, are now much worse and in desperate needs of repair. Even more desperate need of repair. I'm not an engineer, although common sense would say to marry all these projects to work together. A local street, not on the prayer list, had over 24 big rigs use it to deliver asphalt. Think about it. Next time, use the street that you're going to repair next instead of damaging worse a street that's already been damaged, please. This is also obvious on 11th Street off of Grand, which was just slurry sealed and is now being ripped up for other repairs. I don't know if it's gas or water, but it looks like a real waste of our tax dollars for sure. I ask, where is the gas tax money going for the street repairs? There's a lot of big potholes on Grand Avenue. Maybe we could fix those with that money. I was recently told by a city employee and the city manager that if we fix all the bad streets first, we will run out of money. Does this mean that the estimate for the next 20 years will not repair all the streets? I think that this is something we should address, please. If this is so, please stop wasting the funds we have and start using common sense in the repairs. It's my understanding that we have already speeded up the cost to homeowners, which were disclosed at the time of voting for Measure K. And can you please tell me, at the current rate I'm being taxed, how much more my taxes will go up in the next 3 years than was first proposed? I believe the figures that were originally disclosed to the public are very incorrect and will be much more, we will pay much more sooner than later.
Brenda, I need you. You're almost done.
Yeah, one more last item.
Very good.
My disappointment with the Chamber of Commerce and Council not making sure the city of Grover Beach was on the Stone Soup event shirts again another year just is beyond measure. I love the event. I support it. We need to start marketing ourselves. I've asked Peter Keith. He was not aware. And maybe next year we could have that done. I asked last year. I made a lot of people mad. I don't want to be redundant. I asked this year. Next year, let's just do it. Let's make Grover Beach great. Let's get us on the map so people know where that event is and will come. It is an election year, and we're all confused in many ways, in all levels. And I just think it would be really good if we could see some advancement in Grover Beach. Please don't spend any more money on having specialists come and tell us how to make our town better. We know. We did that several years ago. So let's just use our tax dollars wisely. maybe some streetlights to help avoid.
Brenda, I really need you to wrap up. I'll get other people who want to.
Okay, absolutely.
Okay.
All right, thanks much. Maybe you and I could talk a little bit.
Well, I'm looking forward to us talking.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Appreciate your time.
Very good. Thank you, Brenda. Cassandra Appleton.
Thank you, Council, for your time this evening. My name is Cassandra Appleton. I'm a resident of Grover Beach. I am very, very excited tonight because I get to bring something to you that has not been in San Luis Obispo County in a very, very long time. I get to bring you guys the Central Coast Muscular Dystrophy Association Muscle Walk. We are going to have it on September 24th at Dinosaur Caves Park starting at 8 a.m., and we are so excited. The MDA has been so important to us personally. In 2002, I had a beautiful little boy born healthy, and images of being a soccer mom and football sideline mom floated in my head. Fast forward 8.5 years, and I was told he had Friedreich's ataxia. He had muscle disease, and he would be in a wheelchair. Fast forward 5 years, my son is now in a wheelchair. He's 14. He is a straight-A student at Judkins Junior High. He has a smile that will light up any room, a spark in his eye that just shines brighter than any star I've ever seen. And he is the reason why I'm bringing MDA to you guys. We are still looking for sponsors. We're still looking for vendors. We're still looking for teams. Right now, if you get in within the next 3 days, you're going to be entered in to win a complimentary tour of Firestone Walker Brewery, which I'm excited about. I would like to win that personally. I'm hoping Miriam doesn't enter just yet, because then she'll win it. So, you know, I am just so excited about this. It's never been here. It's always been in Santa Maria. It's never been in our home. This is where my son lives. This is where my son was born. This is where we bought our home. This is where we wanted to raise our children. My boys are beautiful, wonderful, intelligent, smart young men, and I want the Central Coast and this community to see that even though he's in a wheelchair, he's got more courage than a lot of people I've seen. And he can get out there with anybody else. In fact, I was so excited this Sunday we got the privilege of going with Jim Maples of Central Coast Beach Wheelchairs. And for the first time in a very long time, I got to play tag with my son on the beach. So with MDA, we get hope. And so I would really, really like to see you guys come out. I would like to see the public come out. Come enjoy a fun day. It's going to be a gorgeous afternoon, gorgeous morning, full of hope, and I'm looking forward to it. So thank you very much.
So, Cassandra, thank you for that. Is there a website or a phone number, or how
yes,
do we sign
people
up?
People can get a hold of me at 805-539-9096. They could also go to mda.org, and it is listed under the Central Coast Muscle Walk, okay. And it's in Pismo Beach, California.
Great. Thank
Dinosaur
you.
Dinosaur Caves Park.
Very excellent. Is there anyone else that would like to comment during public comment tonight? You see no one come forward. Let me close it and bring it back to the council. And we're going to move on. We do not have any ceremonial calendar items tonight. And at this time, we are going to move into our regular business item number 8. This is appointments to the Parks, Recreation, and Beautification Commission. And I believe, Ms. Petra, you have the floor.
Honorable Mayor, City Council members, good evening. There are currently 2 vacancies on our Parks, Recreation, and Beautification Commission. This is due to the expiration of 2 commissioners whose terms expired. The city did promote and advertise the vacancies with press releases in our local newspapers, notices on our website, our Channel 20, and we posted notices in the city bulletin board, city hall, post office, and the train station. The advisory body screening committee comprised of Mayor John Scholes, Councilmember Karen Bright, and Parks, Recreation, and Beautification Commission Vice Chair James Cooper conducted interviews with four applicants on Tuesday, August 23rd. All applicants were advised that the City Council would be requested to consider making the official appointments at tonight's meeting. It should be noted that all the candidates were well qualified and eager to serve our city. At the conclusion of the discussion, the advisory body screening committee recommended that the City Council appoint Walter French and Malaya Quirk to serve 2 4-year terms and to expire on March 31st, 2020. And in the event of an unsolicited vacancy, that we appoint Cindy Price to serve the remainder of a vacant commission position without having to go through the interview process again. So the City Council has several alternatives, including accept the advisory body screening committee's recommendation and adopt the resolution confirming the appointments, reject all or part of the screening committee's recommendations, provide alternative direction to staff. And the screening committee recommends that the City Council accept the committee's recommendations and adopt the resolution appointing Mr. French and Malaya Quirk to serve the 4-year terms expiring on 2020 for the commission, and in the event of the unsolicited vacancy, to appoint Ms. Cindy Price. And if approved, to please introduce Mr. French and Mrs. Quirk to the audience and the City Council members.
Okay, very good. Any questions of staff? No? Karen, did you want to make any comments? Or?
I will. I was very pleased and excited to see the number of folks that came forward and the caliber of residents that came forward to volunteer for this commission. It was a difficult decision, but we really, really thank you all for volunteering to serve. And so just going to say thanks so much.
And I would echo those sentiments for very, really good people who put their hat forward, and we really appreciate people donating and volunteering their time to make our community great and make it special. So I think the screening committee has put forth the recommendations, and I think at this point this is a business item, so I'm not going to open this up to the public. So if someone is prepared to make a motion on this item, I'll accept that motion.
Then I'll make that motion.
Okay.
That we accept the screening committee's recommendations and adopt the resolution authorizing the appointment of Walter French and Malaya Quirk to serve term of office, expiring on March 31st, 2020, and in the event of an unscheduled vacancy, that Cindy Price is appointed to serve the remainder of the vacant commission term without requiring her to go through another interview process.
Okay, very good. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Okay, there's a motion and a second. If there's no additional discussion on the motion, we'll do a roll call.
Yes.
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 Yes. Motion carries 4-0. So with that, I would like to introduce Malaya Quirk and Mr. Walt French. Either of you, maybe both come up and just say hi and introduce yourselves. And Walt, I introduce her first, so she gets to go first.
Thank you. I'm thrilled to be part of this, and excited to contribute everything that I can, and thank you very much.
No, thank you.
Honorable Mayor, City Council, City Staff, members of the public, I want to thank you, the Examining Committee, for announcing that myself and Malaya will be the commissioners for the next 4 years. It is a pleasure and an honor truly to serve this community. Thank you very much.
Thank you both.
Thank you.
Okay. So, let's jump back to the more boring stuff now, shall we? Not that you're boring, Ms. Chapman. I'm just saying that's exciting to have volunteers step up, right? I feel like somebody should have clapped or something, right? Anyway, all right, this is our public hearing item. This is the master fee schedule amendments and clarifications. And Administrative Services Director Chapman, you have the floor.
Honorable Mayor and City Council, Gayla Chapman, Administrative Services Director. Tonight I have before you the master fee schedule amendments and clarifications. And on May 16th, staff brought the annual update to the master fee schedule to the City Council, and we were directed to return with explanations of the units for the development impact fees, the cancellation of fee for the facility rentals, environmental review options, and general plan interpretations. For the development impact fee, the units were adopted with the 2006 development impact fee study. The fees are updated each year based on the consumer price index. We changed the layout to show more clearly in the master fee schedule how the units are to be calculated. On this slide, there is an example using the administrative development impact fees. And part of the changes were the use of persons per dwelling unit is used to clarify how the fee is calculated. Prior to this, staff also updated some calculations. Some of the calculations were incorrect due to some rounding when multiplied. But prior to the change in the single-family residence, I'll go back, the single-family residence, which is shown on the screen, right here, it stated each instead of per person and a 2.56 DU versus 2.56 persons per dwelling unit. So this clarifies a little better so that the charges can be made accordingly. The above wording was changed for development impact fee with the following exceptions. Park improvement and recreation facilities are based on a per unit on various varying dwelling types. Stormwater is based on square foot for impervious surface. And transportation is for residential is based on average number of peak trips per hour per dwelling unit. The commercial, office, and industrial per 1,000 square feet. And the hotel motel traffic study of the actual peak hour trips. The next area the staff was asked to address was the cancellation fees for facility rentals. Some rental fees were less than the cancellation fee. Currently, it's listed as $200 if less than 30 days. Staff is recommending 25% of the total rental fee up to $200. And for over 30 days, it's currently listed as 100. Staff is recommending 12.5% of the total rental fee up to $100. Currently, the environmental reviews are outsourced, and the community development director can decrease the deposit when warranted based on the language in the master fee study, which states that the community development department may increase or decrease the deposits depending on the complexity of the project. Staff was also directed to bring forward a deposit for staff-prepared environmental reviews, and staff is requesting a deposit of $5,000 for a negative declaration and $7,500 for a mitigated negative declaration. These deposits are based on the estimated cost of the staff time to complete these reviews. The next area is general plan and interpretations. Staff is requesting that the general plan, municipal, zoning code, or local COSTA program, the requested deposit is requested to remain at $4,000. These are typically a more complicated and require two public hearings. The interpretations staff is requesting a clarification of the language to change to a code interpretation. The deposit is currently listed at $500, and staff believes this amount is sufficient. This is used when a developer disagrees with the interpretation of the code that's made by the community development director, and there have been no code interpretation applications in the last 10 years. Staff would also like to make it known that Assembly Bill 2217 for notarizations will be raised from $10 to $15 on January 1st, 2017. Since this fee is designated by state law, staff would be administratively adjusting the fee upon that date. And staff is also requesting that the City Council adopt the resolution amending the master fee schedule, and if you have any questions or comments.
Very good. Thank you, Ms. Chapman. Let me see if there's any questions. Councilmember Bright, do you have any questions?
Yes, please, I do. Just a couple. Unfortunately, I'm not as organized as I'd like to be. Okay. I don't think I need to find it. It has to do with, it's something that I just actually learned today. It has to do with when you, like, transfer your water. So it's called a tenant deposit, and it's under Administrative Services Department. It'll be on page 6 at the very bottom.
Okay.
So, for example, my son's family's moving into my house, and they want to take over the water bill. So I called to see. First of all, can't do it online. Can't do it on the phone. You got to come in here and take care of that, which I find very odd, but never mind. So I was told that there is a $220 deposit for them to do that, to basically change it into their name. So I'm just wondering why that is, and if you can explain that to me.
Deposits are only required when a non-owner of the property is requesting for the bill to be in their name. It is to help recover costs in the event that someone were to leave without paying the water bill. We have a deposit on file to take care of that bill.
Okay.
And it's applied per state law.
Oh, okay. Very good. It's good to know. So then if we go back to, well, actually, before we leave that, as far as being able to take care of things like that online, on the phone, I mean, I was able to do those things for my electric bill, my gas bill. Why can't we do that with our water bill?
To a certain extent, we can, as long as the paperwork, the water contract is notarized. It is a water contract that is signed, stating that you are accepting the responsibility for the water. And if the paperwork is notarized, it can be handled through the mail and or faxed to us and deliver the original to us. We will accept a faxed copy to get the water on for someone. We have that used actually quite a bit. If people are out of town and are moving into town, they will get the paperwork notarized and send it to us.
Okay. Okay. All right. I'll think on that for a bit.
Mm-hmm.
So then, going back to the cancellation fee for facility rentals, specifically, the cancellation fee for facility rentals that are canceled more than 30 days prior to the rental date is currently $100. And so you're recommending that this stay at $100 for the weekend all-day rate. So can you give me an example of what that fee might possibly be? My concern is that, you know, if the fee is like $100, let's say, we're charging $12.50. Is it even – I'm concerned that we're using staff time to collect fees, process fees, where it's costing more to collect the fee than the fee is worth.
Right.
Am I making sense?
You're making sense. This was brought up, I believe, by Councilmember Lee during the master fee update that we did in May. And the question was, will a Grover Beach nonprofit who has the building for an hour has a $29 rental fee and a $100 cancellation fee? So that didn't quite seem fair, so we were asked to go back and relook at this fee to determine how could we make it more fair for an individual who may need to cancel and not end up owing the city more money than what they were originally paying for.
Sure, and I understand that. But you've got a $30 fee, and now you're going to charge them 12.5% of $30. It's not worth charging the fee. It's not worth your time to take the check or deposit the check, or you see what I'm saying?
I understand what you're saying. If council wants to give us direction as to how to go about handling the cancellation for a nonprofit or for, let's see, Grover Beach nonprofit or other nonprofit, the residential, it would probably work out so that the fee would be adequate to cover the cost.
Okay. Thank you.
I think that's a good segue. We'll have a conversation tonight as to, and I don't think it's just nonprofit. It's a matter of fairness and timing. So, Miriam, you have any questions?
No, I didn't have any questions right now.
Okay. Mayor Pro Tem Lee, any questions?
Mine were covered by Councilmember Bright, and I do have some housekeeping items after we go through. It's dates and so forth.
Are these dates and typos? Is that something you can give them afterwards?
Yep.
Okay.
Already provided.
Oh, okay. Excellent. I don't have any questions. I have some comments. So at this point, let me open this up to the public. See if there's anyone from the public that would like to address the item before the council tonight. Seeing no one come forward, I'm going to close it and bring it back. Let's have some discussion. So, did you want to start? Where are you taking us?
I was just going to, minor logistics, I'll let Councilmember Bright and you start that conversation, and I'll jump in and into the fray.
Okay. Karen, you want to start?
No.
No? All right. All right.
So
let me say, I think you, and thanks to staff. Thank you for the staff report. You did capture the concerns that the council felt needed to be come back. So whether Mayor Pro Tem Lee or anyone else brought it up, I think these are comments that the council majority said we want to take a closer look at. So now let me dive in. So, Karen, I'm tracking with you on this issue of cancellation. I'm really there's two things that I want to say, and these are, I think, things we should really talk about. One is that I definitely am not a fan to say we're going to charge more than an actual fee if someone cancels. I think that was patently unfair, and I think while this is going in a better direction, I do have a concern with, and this is my second one. I'm okay with charging someone who cancels with less than 30 days. I think there is a commitment they've made. It does affect the ability to rent the space. But more than 30 days, I got an issue. I think if someone cancels with more than 30 days, I believe they aren't given a sufficient notice. So why are we charging people if they are organized enough to say that 45 days or 60 days, I don't need the facility, so why are we still charging them? And I think this kind of opens up that whole thing of equity and fairness. So I think, Karen, I know you were kind of going down that road, but more of the 12% and then the cost for staff to collect that cost more. But I'm just thinking that maybe we need to think about 30 days or less, understand, more than 30 days, I have a huge
I agree with that. Certainly agree with you there. Absolutely. It's just the other. I mean, it didn't make any sense from either side. But
okay. So anyone else? Let's stay on that one. Miriam, you have anything on that?
Well, I guess that does bring up a question in my mind. How often does this cancellation and these fees even happen?
Mayor, council members, Kathy Petker, just wanted to clarify a couple items on your topic. We've only had one cancellation in the past year. It's very rare, and it was actually by a nonprofit. So
And they did give us sufficient notice. It is pretty unusual. In regards to the actual rental of nonprofits, and most renters do rent for a minimum of two hours, but almost always 4 to 8. So when we're talking about deposits and returns, that's not just a 1 hour in terms of staff time. So when we're refunding those and charging those, and that's very rare too. I can't even think of more than two in the last year in private rentals. So I hope that helps.
Kinda, sorta. Does that help you?
Kinda, sorta.
Mayor Pro Tem, you want to jump in?
Kinda, sorta.
Okay.
So going down the cancellation discussion, I think the intent is to make it our facilities as easy and as straightforward and as accessible to the public as possible. Realizing that a cancellation within 30 days does make it a little bit difficult to rent in a timely fashion. I agree with you that the over 30 days, hopefully we have a very easy opportunity for someone else to rent, whether it's a citizen, a non-citizen, non-profit, or private event. So if I'm kind of hearing potentially where the rest of the council is going, I'd be amenable to effectively waiving or eliminating a cancellation fee of 30 days before with more than 30 days notice. And then I think a recommendation of 25% of a total rental fee for less than 30 days provides staff the time and effort necessary in order to return those fees. Not sure this goes into that same discussion, but looking back on our treasurer's reports throughout the years, I've seen a key deposit return brought back on there, and so I don't know if there's a process that that can kind of be done internally so that we don't have to we basically accept a key deposit from in a second check, I think, from a renter, and then after they return the keys back to the city, we basically issue them another check back. And so there's time and effort by staff to do something that happens over the course of business, whether it's a second check or not. That's away from where we're talking tonight. But I think I'd be in support of having a 25% up to a maximum of 200 for reservation cancellations less than 30 days, and then just eliminating the cancellation fee for those 30 days or more.
Okay. So I think I'm just kind of seeing where the council is, and then we'll make a motion on everything. So then let's move into I guess I've got environmental reviews. I think there was a clarification. So staff is basically saying if there is a negative declaration done in-house, it would be a $5,000 deposit, and if it is a mitigated neg deck, it would be $7,500, correct?
Yes.
So, Gayla, can you clarify for me what a lot of other cities do is someone – submits a permit application, and in part of that there is environmental review and an environmental determination, and maybe Bruce can help. I see him moving. Is that part of the application fee, or is that separate? I would think that we may not necessarily have the experience at staff level to do a mitigated negative DAC or even an EIR, but staff could certainly hopefully make a determination. So I'm just curious.
Good evening, mayors, members of the council. I think in general, just to break it down, we take in a staff application fee for the development permit or the use permit, and in general, that covers those type of incidental costs. Once we hand it over to an environmental consultant, then all those costs are absorbed by the consultant or paid by the applicant, but to the consultant.
Okay, and then with consultants doing these different levels of environmental review, what are some of the numbers you're seeing come in? And how does that compare to this $5,500?
Just recently, we had two proposals for a mitigated neg deck for a pretty simple project, and the two consultant contracts were $9,000 and $10,000. So staff set the in-house at just slightly below that based on efficiencies of being familiar with the project and so forth. But in the time I've been here, I can only think of besides council-generated projects where staff has done the in-house environmental review, very few private development projects that I can think of staff has undertaken.
Okay. And so basically project comes in, staff determines it requires some level of environmental review. You then suggest that it be go out to bid to a consultant. That consultant gives you an estimate, and that's what you ask the applicant to give that in as a deposit plus 25% administration, or how does that work?
Exactly that, except typically we will get two proposals so the applicant can see and that we're getting the best value for the dollar.
Okay, very good. So I don't know if anyone else had any comments on. I think those clarifications helped me, and I think adding this definitely covers that gap that was identified previously. Jeff, you have anything?
Just a curiosity question. I'm familiar with a mitigated neg deck, but when is a mitigated neg deck used instead of just a neg deck?
There would have to be some kind of mitigation proposed as part of the project. So it would have to have a potentially significant environmental impact, in which case then a mitigation is generated to reduce it to less than significant. So there are very few of those these days. There's usually some kind of mitigation measure that arises, whether that's pretty standard like cultural resources, but that's the answer between the two.
So just a straight neg deck is very minimally used these days.
Correct.
And so the fee is there just on the off chance? Or, I mean, and if it's a categorically exempt project, realizing that's not on this list, so is there is that done internally?
That is, and it's a very small time commitment to do that, and again, that's just absorbed in the development application deposit.
Gotcha. So going towards that discussion, is there, whether we go reduce the mitigated neg deck amount down to 5,000 for both, or keep it at 7,500 for both. I'm thinking if a neg deck is very rarely used, this is a deposit anyway, and so if there's a fee recovery, if they're typically in the $9,000 to $10,000 range, then if we reduce the mitigated neg deck down one to five, they're both at the same level. But it provides, again, a little bit of incentive for someone to come in and say, okay, this is what I'm doing, realizing it's still a cost recovery towards through the project. Okay. So and then combining the two of them.
You had me at making the numbers match, but then you said combine and you threw before a loop.
So combine so that we don't get rid of the word neg deck. So neg deck and mitigated neg deck are the same price.
Okay. Well, it's
same deposit.
Same deposit, right?
Correct.
Okay. Any comments to my left? Karen or Marion?
The simpler the better, as far as I'm concerned.
Okay.
Yes, no comment.
All right.
Go for it.
All right. So I think your suggestion is that we just make them both a $5,000 deposit. And I think that's fair. And I'm not going to weigh in on this because I think, you know, my background and I'm not getting into the weeds. We're talking about the fee schedule. So, all right. I think my last clarification is on general plan amendments and zone changes. I think we know we don't get a lot of those either. A lot of other cities get this, but yeah. I'm just kind of curious, Bruce, as to the recommendation is to keep that deposit at $4,000, and I was just kind of curious when I see other cities it's a lot higher, so I'm just curious on that.
You're correct. We just don't see these types of applications very often. With use permits, we see enough. This deposit is to represent a typical or an average application. Okay. They can be lower or they can be higher. That's why we can adjust, or I can adjust the deposit depending on the complexity of the project when it's submitted. These, as you know, Mayor, have a wide variety. Someone could come in and want to amend a use permit requirement in the table to a permitted use. That's a really simple change. It still has a lengthy process attached to it.
Okay.
So these could range from, if I saw something like that come in, I might say that's $2,000 worth of extra staff time to do the review on that. If someone came in with a local coastal program amendment and zone and general plan change, it would probably be $15,000.
Oh, okay. So I don't know if there's maybe it's a deposit and then with the disclaimer that you have the discretion to be able to request a larger deposit depending
Correct.
On the complexity of the project.
I would use my common sense.
We like that word. We like that approach.
We like people who have that.
Okay. And then on the interpretation, Maybe just help make the distinction between an interpretation and an appeal of decisions, because I know that you can make decisions administratively. That is appealable to the city manager. His decisions are appealable to the council. So I'm just kind of help us understand and the public understand.
Again, a typically a development code interpretation. Again, in the time I've been here, we haven't charged an applicant any fee. I would say any time I think that their interpretation might be different than mine and it's reasonable, we've brought that to the Planning Commission for them to weigh in, no charge.
Okay.
This is really only for, I would say, a frivolous interpretation. If we said the code says the setback is 10 feet and somebody said, no, that's really 9 feet. No, you'll have to pay to bring that to the Planning Commission to get their interpretation.
And the number is 500, Kayla, on that, the interpretation?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, very good. All right. So I think those are the areas that you identified. I think we've got some direction from council. Is there any other comments or questions from the council?
I had one last question.
Okay.
And it is in reference to the Parks and Rec, the fee description and unit. It's on page 20. Just as a clarification, please. So the special event outdoor assembly, non-city sponsored events for over 100 participants. So a pre-application review says must have review prior to application being filed. So $350. So this is prior to your application being filed. So you pay $350. Do you give the application at that time? I'm not quite sure how that works.
Ms. Becker.
Thank you.
And I see City Attorney, you want to add something? Okay.
I'll defer to him as soon as if there's any additional questions. But
okay.
Essentially, the fee is part of the process of staff review. All the department directors are reviewing all of the application items, and it's our time to review all of those and write down all of the requirements for the event. So that fee covers our internal staff time to review and then set up meetings with the applicants and go over the documents.
So this is so it says must have review prior to application being filed. So they're going to pay you $350 before they even fill out their application?
No, actually, it means at the same time that they turn in their application. It doesn't mean it's approved. It means it's submitted. It's all their documents are complete, and they've turned in their $350 fee to have it reviewed.
So okay.
Sometimes those pieces don't come in all at the same time, but we have to have that fee in order to move it forward.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So at this point in time, they don't know if they're going to be able to go forward or
Correct.
Not.
Correct. We have a 30-day notice, and we will contact them within 30 days to let them know it's insufficient.
Okay. And so then the application fee is $490, no city council review. So once the pre-application, can you just explain that to
sure.
me? Probably easier than me.
So that additional fee, if it only stays internally and it's approved by the city manager in-house and all of the items have been completed and staff has assisted them with meeting their additional items, then that is their final fee and they're done. So it's, I think, a total of $890. Their special event permit will be processed, it will be complete, and they can continue their event.
So that's for 100 participants up to 999 participants.
Mm-hmm.
Correct?
Yep. Yep.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep.
Okay. Someone want to try a motion on this item?
Actually, yeah, I'll make a motion with a slight housekeeping element as well. I'll make a motion, if I can get back to the correct page, that we approve the master fee update as presented by staff with the changes. Oh dear, I neglected to write them down. Where we combine the line items of negative declaration and mitigated mitigated neg deck, and put that fee at deposit amount at $5,000.
Okay.
And what was the second one? So where we remove
cancellation.
Cancellation fee for cancellations in excess of 30 days notice. and then with a clarification that on in the resolution, update the second whereas to include today's date, and then verify throughout the master fee schedule appropriate dates based upon this evening's action.
Okay. Don, are you clear on that motion? Okay. Is everyone else clear on that? Is there a second?
I'll second.
Okay. There's a second. Is there any additional discussion on the motion? Okay. Seeing none, roll call.
Yes.
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 Yes. Motion carries 4-0. Let's move on to our consent agenda. Thank you, Ms. Chapman. So on our consent agenda, this is where we take a group of items that are considered routine, and I believe we have six items on our agenda tonight. I'm not going to read every one of them. Hopefully everyone has a copy of the agenda. So at this point, do any members of the council want to remove any items from consent? Okay, seeing no one. I don't have any speaker requests for to speak on the consent agenda. So at this point, I'll accept the motion on the consent agenda as presented by staff.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, there's a motion by Mayor Pro Tem Lee, a second by Councilmember Bright. If there's no additional discussion on the motion, roll call.
Yes.
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 Yes. Motion carries. Thank you. Okay, let's move on to item number 9. This is clarification of council direction on proposed ordinance to regulate commercial medical marijuana uses. City manager, were you going to start this item, or is Mr. Buckingham going to give the staff report? Okay, you have the floor, Bruce.
Good evening, Mayor, members of the council. Just a quick background. In July, the council directed staff to start working on a draft ordinance to regulate commercial medical marijuana uses. Last month in August, the council provided staff with direction on the major components of that draft ordinance. The purpose of tonight's meeting is to confirm staff's understanding of the council's direction and seek clarification on a few outstanding items before beginning work on the draft ordinance. I did want to note that as part of this public hearing process, the council has the ability to make revisions to this draft ordinance. So, you've given us some valuable input. We will draft an ordinance to the best of our ability. But through the public hearing process, the council, planning commission recommendation, and the council has the ability to make changes. So, in short, nothing is set in stone based on the direction that's being provided or has been provided as well. So manufacturing uses, the quick summary from last meeting, these uses would be allowed in the industrial area located south of Farrell Road as part of an overlay zone. This was provided to you last time. It's really all of the industrial zone and a portion of the coastal industrial zone that is along South 4th Street. The council did not identify any minimum distances from sensitive uses such as schools or any maximum limit on square footage or the number of businesses. So the council did request additional information on level one and level two manufacturing prior to providing direction to staff. The state defines level one manufacturing as being without the use of volatile solvents and level two as being with the use of volatile solvents. And those solvents typically include butane, propane, acetone, ethanol, isopropanol, and heptane, which are all considered hazardous materials. We double-checked with the state. Currently, they make no distinction between the two processes except for those references to non-volatile and volatile. However, that is likely to change as the state establishes their regulations as required by state statutes implementing the Medical Marijuana Regulation and Safety Act, or MRSA. So although none of the current parties that we've received information expressed an interest in operating level two manufacturing, staff believes it's likely there probably would be some demand based on so far so few cities that we can find that do allow level two. Currently, there are numerous types of industrial businesses in the city that have a permit for hazardous materials, and they range from everything from automotive service to repair painting facilities, cabinetry, and water treatment. And it is the County Department of Environmental Health Services that's the agency responsible for permitting and regulating the storage and use of hazardous materials. So if the council does decide to allow Level 2 manufacturing, staff would recommend that commercial-grade laboratories be required at such facilities. Although these types of laboratories are more expensive, at least according to information staff's received, they do contain fume hoods and other specialized equipment, which at least reduces the risk of explosion or fire. Staff would also mention that, again, setting a limit on the total square footage for manufacturing may be beneficial in determining the demand and providing time to implement the ordinance and determine if revisions are necessary. So in conclusion, staff is seeking clarification on whether the council wants to allow Level 2 manufacturing. Cultivation, in summary, these uses would also be allowed in that same overlay zone as manufacturing. No minimum distances from sensitive uses were identified by the council. The council did support cultivation within the building, was opposed to outdoor cultivation, and the council also supported the mixed light grow facilities that allow for a combination of artificial and natural light. Another outstanding issue is whether the council wants to place a limit on the maximum square footage or the number of businesses that would be allowed to cultivate. Although the council directed staff to require water conservation level at a level up to 90% if feasible, if the council does not establish a limit on the maximum square footage for cultivation, the water supply analysis required by the California Environmental Quality Act, or CEQA, would need to assume a reasonable estimate of cultivation area to estimate water usage. If the council established a maximum square footage on cultivation, then the CEQA analysis would be capped at that square footage. So just as an example, to reiterate this, if the council capped cultivation at 110,000 square feet, which allows basically five indoor grow facilities based on the 22,000 square feet max allowed by the state, the water usage, assuming a 70% recycling rate, would be about 23 acre feet, 22.5. If no limit is set, the CEQA analysis, again, would include a reasonable number of facilities. We haven't analyzed this, but based on just vacant lots, this could easily be 20 lots that we could say is reasonable to develop with cultivation, and that would be about 90 acre feet. So, very simple. If cultivation amount increases, so will water usage. So, again, staff is seeking clarification on whether the council wants to establish maximum square footage of cultivation. Dispensaries. The council identified, again, the industrial area south of Farrell Road for dispensaries, but there was some discussion about increased setbacks. Specifically, the council discussed the possibility of a 100-foot setback from residential zones, and I think focused especially on the Calvin Court area, amongst others. So, again, staff is seeking clarification on if and where the council would like to include a buffer from residential zones, and also whether that should include a buffer from non-conforming residential uses that do exist in the industrial area. So, and again, this is the 100-foot setback along Calvin, and just as a visual, this would be a 100-foot setback along Messina Court and the other residential uses that front onto South 13th, and then 100 feet along Farrell Road. So if it's white, as shown on here, that means that that lot would not allow that use. In essence, if the 100-foot setback extends into any portion of the lot, the typical way of interpreting that is then that lot cannot have that use. Staff also did clarify that state law requires dispensaries be a minimum distance of 600 feet from public and private schools. There was a little bit of uncertainty about whether that applied to cultivation. In essence, the ordinance says 600 feet from a storefront, meaning most like usually only a dispensary, and then if the dispensary had could have cultivation, the 600 feet would apply only in those senses where cultivation is done with dispensaries. And so just to give you an idea, the one school currently is at the corner of Baden and 11th. So drawing a 600-foot radius, those lots, just by state law alone, would preclude or prohibit dispensaries at that location.
Okay.
The council did not specifically discuss whether a limitation should be placed on the number of dispensaries that would be allowed to operate in the city. Again, as previously mentioned, setting a limit may be beneficial in determining demand and providing time, again, to implement an ordinance and to make sure that the regulatory bugs have been worked out, if you will. So, again, staff is seeking clarification on the number of dispensaries allowed to operate in the city. The council indicated its support for a two-step development permit process. The first step would be to obtain a use permit or a discretionary permit that would approve the location and establish the land use requirements. The second step involves obtaining a regulatory permit, which would be ministerial. If you do X, Y, and Z, the permit would be issued. And that's primarily to demonstrate compliance with state law prior to opening and on an ongoing basis to ensure the business is operating in compliance with both state and local laws. Currently, use permits require planning commission approval and are only considered by the council on appeal. Staff is seeking clarification on whether, in this case, the planning commission or the city council wants to take on that role as a review authority for medical marijuana uses. Potential adverse impacts. The draft ordinance will include safety measures, meaning security measures as well, and odor control measures for all proposed medical marijuana uses. And lastly, design standards. Draft ordinance would include design standards for existing buildings, including but not limited to new paint, architectural enhancements, minimum landscape requirements. Staff is going to need some more time to kind of develop this. Is a side note, recognize that most of the lots on Huston fall under an existing master plan that the lots that S&S Homes owns, and that approval actually has design requirements built into it. So the rest of the industrial area does not have design requirements currently, so just something for the council to consider. So in conclusion, staff is seeking clarification on the following. Should level two manufacturing be allowed, and if so, should there be a requirement for the commercial grade laboratories? Should cultivation uses have a maximum square footage of canopy area? Should dispensaries include a buffer from residential zones and or non-conforming residential units? Should there be a limit on the number of dispensaries to operate in the city? It's omitted on here, but as I just mentioned, should the Planning Commission or the City Council be the review authority? And, of course, any other council comments or clarifications that the council would like to make tonight. That concludes staff's report.
Bruce, thank you for that staff report. City Attorney.
Yes, thank you, Honorable Mayor, Council members. Just as an addition to the Community Development Director's report, and while you're considering the potential limitations on either the cultivation area or number of dispensaries, note that it is relatively easy to increase the number. It is very, very difficult to back it down. Mm. So if you set a limit on dispensaries on five and realize that five is too many for whatever reason, it is difficult, if five are established, to then go back. You can change the ordinance, go back down to three. The two existing or two of the five existing dispensaries will be legal non-conforming uses, and unless that use is abandoned, they can continue to exist. The reverse of that, you approve three, everything is going well. It is not a large effort on staff part or a large environmental generally effort to increase that number to a larger number. Same thing applies to the canopy area, et cetera. Just something for you to consider when you're deliberating.
That's actually very good input, so thank you for that. Okay, let's see if there's any questions of staff. Who's got questions? Marion?
Yeah, well, I have a couple questions. Thank you for the report. The clarification at the end as to exactly what you need is very useful. So most of that I'll address during, when we talk about everything. I guess my questions aren't as pertinent, but I'll ask them. In the beginning of the report, it says the ordinance will not address adult recreational use as proposed in Proposition 64. I thought we had discussed at some point at least addressing recreational use on some level. One thing I worry about is the day that Prop 64, for example, passes, and particularly in our neighborhoods, people just start planting and start dispensing and start... I would at least like something to apply to keep our neighborhoods status quo until we can get to it. So that would just be one question comment I have, okay. I guess. And then... just one thing. Maybe this is a application question, but in the part about the permit process, I like how the legitimate businesses are going to have to go through the first step and the second step. How are we going to address? I've heard different numbers, but there are a multitude of mobile dispensaries already functioning within the town, and there are a multitude of pseudo-dispensaries also perhaps functioning in the town. And aside from legalities, I mean, that's just not fair for new businesses to be under this structure and then the old businesses not paying the tax and not going through the structure. So will we have a way to get at that? Does that need to be in the ordinance, or is that more enforcement?
City Attorney?
Thank you, Honorable Mayor, Council Members. With regard to the tax part, if the voters of the city decide to pass the tax, that tax would be applicable to a commercial establishment in the city. With regard to illegally existing and operating dispensaries, that is an issue of enforcement, no matter how you write the law. If somebody operates the a business, doesn't have to be a dispensary, in violation of that law, that is more of an enforcement issue rather than an ordinance issue. Council has the ability to direct staff to include non-medical uses if and when they are permitted under the law, but that would expand the scope of the work and probably bring some other considerations into play. At this point in time, we've been directed to focus on the medical marijuana, and that's what we've been doing.
Thank you.
And then with respect to the mobile dispensaries, that is a, I think you were kind of hinting that is not an allowed use in the city at this time.
Well, this time it is not an allowed use. Yeah, and I'm sorry. Perfect. If I didn't make, currently there's a total ban on any commercial activity in the city.
Okay.
All right. And I guess my last question is, do we need to include language in the measure in case Measure L doesn't pass, or are we thinking this ordinance will be post-November, so we'll know that?
Yeah, it's likely that final action before the council would be after the election, so you would recognize that outcome.
Okay.
Okay. That's all the questions I had. Thanks.
Very good. Karen?
Thank you. I just have one or two. Regarding Level 2 manufacturing, in your review of the different levels 1 and 2, did you come across any issues in other cities with the Level 2 that allow Level 2 manufacturing?
We were really unable to find any. I was unable to find any examples of Level 2 manufacturing, and more than just a couple, and we didn't see anything that was really different about the requirements for Level 2 in those couple of examples. What we have heard a lot about is, remember, most of this kind of manufacturing is happening illegally, and so there is a lot of cases of explosions and fires happening because they are currently unregulated. I know there's also a lot of information regarding Colorado, and because they do allow that in Colorado. And again, we didn't take a long look at their experiences there.
Okay, so then we don't we don't have a whole lot of history regarding legal level two manufacturing.
That's accurate, yes.
Okay.
May I piggyback on that before,
please,
you, before
sure.
you go to your next question?
Absolutely.
Sure.
So does the city allow level two manufacturing currently?
No. Of commercial medical marijuana?
No.
Of anything?
No.
Of anything?
No.
Of anything.
No.
Of anything.
I think your point is, do we allow level two manufacturing within the city limits? Not on medical marijuana, but anything.
I'm not familiar with any business that would be comparable to level two manufacturing. There's a difference between storage and use of materials in-house.
So if I was to come in with an industrial permit to manufacture widgets, what limitation would I have on the type of manufacturing of level one versus level two, what I currently have in the city?
You would go to the County Department of Environmental Health Services, I think it was, and issue a permit for your hazardous material.
So which would be the case in this, if we move forward with level two, or then that would be the same approach for someone?
The only difference being that the state will be issuing specific regulations with regard to differences between level one and level two. In other words, that use is controlled beyond the County Department of Health.
Okay.
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 Well, we'll have some discussion. I don't want to get too far, because I think we're trying to get some clarification, then we're going to give some additional direction. So, Karen, you have anything else?
No, I do want to pursue that further, of course. So go on then. Thank you.
Okay. Jeff, you have the floor.
Thank you. And I appreciate staff's coming forward with these clarifications. Just two, possibly three questions. With regards to the attachment one and the attachment two, so attachment one is no setbacks, and that would be for cultivation or dispensaries. Specifically,
based on council direction that staff heard, this would apply to manufacturing and cultivation.
Okay.
On dispensaries, we heard discussion of setbacks, but we didn't arrive at a specific setback amount or location.
And that would be attachment two with a 100-foot dispensary setback.
And this is only an example, just again right. to demonstrate if you adopted 100-foot, mm-hmm. these are the lots that would be eliminated.
Okay. And so, but there's no, the only state setback requirements are the 600 feet from schools for dispensaries.
Correct.
Okay. Okay. Very good. And then, so my other question had to do with more of a discussion that we had on the dais last time with regards to location. So of dispensaries versus location of the use in mm-hmm. totality. So I don't know if there's a specific question for staff on that. And I think that's all I have for now.
Okay, very good. So, I Miriam, you picked up on the first question I had was, or maybe a clarification on this applying to commercial medical marijuana versus adult recreation use. And so I think that's something we can talk about, especially given the timing of when we would expect this ordinance to go into effect and the timing of the November election. So if we're talking of doing this in a land use framework and planning framework, and obviously there's a regulatory component, it may be worth having that expanded if necessary or waiting. So we'll have to see, because this is a process. We're trying to get this process started. So I want to make sure staff, with respect to commercial cultivation and nurseries, and you had talked about the water demand component, are you also looking for clarification on the maximum square footage of the cultivation area? Because I know there's a table on page 3 of the staff report. So I wanted to just make sure that is something you're seeking clarification on. And then the question I really have is, you referred to the area that we're looking at for the overlay. Do we have a range of the size of the parcels? And the reason I'm asking that question is, rather than us picking an arbitrary number, it would be nice to know if the lots range from 5,000 square feet to an acre, which then would dictate the size because they would have to meet setback requirements and parking requirements and things of that nature. So I'm just kind of curious.
So they range probably from about 5,000 square feet up to 1 acre. So along South 4th Street, you do have a lot of small lots that are 5,000 to 7,000 square feet. Some of these lots that are in Highland are 10,000, 15,000, and then most all of the lots on Huston are just about 1 acre for the most part.
Okay. So if you just assume half of that acre was taken up for a building and the other half for parking and other accessory, you could potentially have 22,000 square feet on the majority of those lots on Huston.
I can tell you that the few buildings that have been developed on Huston, right around 17,000 square feet on a 40,000 square foot lot. So it's almost 50% lot coverage when you get done with parking and landscaping.
Okay. So, and then in the table that's in our staff report, you talked about assuming a maximum number of 22,000 square feet.
Yeah, one thing that staff did find in most ordinances that allow cultivation is some type of limitation on the area, the canopy overall.
Yeah.
I mean, it can be divvied up amongst as many businesses, but all this is illustrating is that if you looked at the from economies of scale, if you're going to cultivate, most cultivators are going to do the maximum state license amount, which is 22,000 square feet. So this is an increment of 22,000 square feet, so you can see 110,000 equals 5,
gotcha.
220 equals 10, and so forth.
Okay, so then we'll have to have some discussion on at least giving some direction. We can always change this as the ordinance comes back. So just get that clarification. So thank you for that. Distribution, transport, and delivery. I just think we need further clarification on that. I kind of thought at the last meeting there was either a reference or an indication that these types of uses were either allowed currently or are they regulated by state, and should this ordinance address those? Because obviously there's a difference between delivery and transport. So
there's, first of all, probably several people in the audience that can answer that better than I can, but I can tell you that one of the changes under MRSA that will really influence this is that the cultivator will now have to send it to a distributor before it can be sent to the dispensary.
Okay.
So my understanding right now is that that's not required, and so you will see that requirement, and that's what's going to create this distribution business. And as part of the distribution, you're going to have commercial deliveries of that as it's transported from one location to another.
Okay. Very good.
So on that question, so the transport is different than a mobile dispensary, though, correct?
In this context, it is. Transport means it's a specific license that the state will have that's tied to the distribution.
Okay.
Because there are definitions that we're going to incorporate into this ordinance that will make that distinction.
Correct.
Right? Okay.
Let me ask a question.
Sure.
So can you say that one more time, that MRSA is going to require a cultivator must send, say that
must
again,
send the product to a warehouse, if you will, where then it'll be tested and then sent to the dispensary.
Thank you.
Okay.
Now there's exceptions to that. They are going to allow a cultivator to send it directly to a manufacturer, and it won't have to go through that distributorship, but again, there's a lot of details in the regulatory.
Gotcha. I just kind of wanted to kind of get that in my head, the difference between transport and delivery and so on. Thank you.
Okay. I don't believe I have any other questions at this time. Let me open this up to the public. I don't have any speaker request forms, but I see people moving, holding on to blue slips. If you got a blue slip, please bring it forward. Welcome. State your name for the record. That'd be
absolutely. Evening, Mr. Mayor, Council, staff. My name is Damian Martin. As I discussed last time I was here to present, I advocate for the smart and effective regulation of medical cannabis industry throughout Southern California with the objective of building a multi-jurisdictional integrated supply chain and working here with Milkman Collective. I want to take the few minutes I have here at the moment to talk about setbacks. First and foremost, I'd like to kind of clarify one thing, and that 600-foot state level setback does apply to cultivators. I'll just briefly read from Business and Professions Code Section 19.3.22, and it states, if the application is for a cultivator or a dispensary, provide evidence that the proposed location is located beyond at least 600-foot radius from a school, as required by Section 11.362.768 of the Health and Safety Code. So that will need to be addressed. And kind of with that, Health and Safety Code, Section 11.362.768, the way that setback functions, it's a parcel line to parcel line setback. And that's how we've been talking about the setback here today when we've discussed a 100-foot residential setback. My position is kind of, if you're going to use this as a means for providing economic and development opportunities in that industrial zone south of Farrell Road is to not apply the setbacks, because what you've done here is you've eliminated a substantial number of parcels from economic development. So my take on it would be not to apply a setback, but what I would say that if you do apply a setback, you don't have to apply parcel line to parcel line setback. What I would recommend that if you do insist upon a 100-foot setback from the residential zones is that you use a parcel line to intervening structure setback or an intervening structure to intervening structure setback. What I mean by that is that you would take the you would measure the setback by starting as the closest point from the residential lot line and then applying that to the first structure on one of the industrial parcels. What that will do, instead of rather than eliminating a number of parcels, it'll just eliminate some square footage that's available for development. But it'll keep the parcels in play. And you could also do that intervening structure to structure from the residential lot to the you're not too worried about the front yard being closed. It's more about the house being closed. But that's just an option to consider. Thank you very much for your time and look forward to speaking again.
Thank you for those comments. Is there anyone else? No one, huh? Okay. We're going to close this to the public. We're going to come back to the council. And there will be obviously opportunities to weigh in on the draft ordinances as they start to come forward through the Planning Commission and ultimately to City Council. So I'm sure people understand this is not your last time to weigh in on this item. Okay, so let's go down.
Can I ask one more question before you do that? It has to do with the setback.
Okay.
So, Bruce, if you could bring up Attachment 3. So that's the 600-foot from the school, correct?
Correct.
What happens if that school no longer exists in that spot?
Then that setback goes away.
Okay.
If a new school comes in, then a new setback would be applied.
And so if we were to establish this, and would we effectively be limiting schools 600 feet away from Farrell? I mean, if – and hypothetically speaking, if that school was not there and Farrell was the limit of the location for the use, so we would be effectively having a 600-foot setback off of Farrell for any school uses. Did I say that correctly?
Well, that would depend on specific factual scenario, because not your theoretical or your hypothetical assumes that every parcel along Farrell was developed in this type of use. You would be measuring the location of the potential location of a new school from existing uses or potentially ones that are in process of being entitled. Okay. In other words, we have no way of knowing which of the parcels along Farrell would be actually open for that or would be actually occupied by use that would require a 600-foot setback. So we can't draw a blanket line the way that you described, unless all of those parcels are taken.
Perfect. Okay. And I, oh, Bruce.
I was just going to add, in reading most ordinances, at the time you submit your application, you submit a map that shows the distance from any sensitive uses that that ordinance requires a setback from. So.
And we're talking about a state requirement of setback for certain uses in this particular case, correct?
Correct.
So in theory, this map actually should be all blue up to Farrell with the exception of the city parcel, and then a dashed line for those types of uses. Any other uses that we choose to regulate may locate in that. So I think people are thinking that way. So I think the discussion of whether you measure from parcel line to parcel line has some validity. Whether it's from the front door of the school to the nearest intervening structure, I think maybe we should have staff look at both. We can make a final decision when that comes back to us. That should not be that difficult to have that analysis. Yes, sir.
I believe that the state law does say 600 feet from parcel line to parcel line. If the council adopted other sensitive uses, then you could make that distinction.
Okay. So please clarify that as you're moving forward in the ordinance. Everyone okay with that? Because we're not going to have a debate tonight. Okay. Let's go down the list. So I think it would be wise for us, as we were talking about this ordinance, applying only to medical with obviously the timing of Prop 64. I think that a lot of and Matt, you and I discussed this a little bit. I think there would be a lot of common things here that would apply, whether it's recreational use or medical, correct?
That's correct, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. There will be overlap. There will be commonalities in the commercial usage. And given where we are in the schedule, we're in September. The election is 2 months away. We have the Planning Commission process. We're looking at likely being able to go to the council in early 2017, once we have everything in place and everything done. So I think we'll be able to incorporate recreational use if that's the council direction, if the proposition is passed.
Very good.
I think for me, what I was most worried about, what I heard was possibly slowing down the process, and I definitely don't want to do that. If anything, I might just mention trying to include recreational just in the section on personal cultivation. Because it just worries me that people are just going to start bothering their neighbors from day one. But if that slows everything down, then we can address it in January, you know, in a separate issue.
But I think that gets city attorney.
And again, we'll look at that and provide you with some of the responses. But personal cultivation is outside of Prop 64, and you're talking about controlled commercial recreational marijuana uses. It's the personal cultivation is controlled currently under separate laws, and it's permitted to a certain extent, and we do have that in place. Okay.
So even if Prop 64 legalizes recreational use, it doesn't mean it legalizes personal cultivation.
That is correct. That is my understanding.
No, actually, it's closer to public. It's okay.
And again, that is my understanding, and I'm by no means an expert in the subject matter, but the regulations that are being proposed are going to control, as far as I know, commercial activities. And to the extent they do address any type of personal growth, obviously staff will be dealing with that as well.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So I think, as Matt said, there's a lot of overlap, and I don't envision if we have to amend this based on the vote in November that it will not be a major effort that needs to occur, because we are looking at this from setting the planning framework and the regulatory framework that would easily accommodate that with the vote. So I don't think we need to delay this to do that. I think we are heading in the right direction. Okay. So let's move down quickly. Manufacturing, warehouse, and distribution and testing. I think this is the first category. Sounds like we're okay with the location. I think we did not recommend any distance from sensitive uses, correct, Bruce?
Correct.
And then limitation on use. And I think this maybe gets back to the
discussion regarding number. Is this basically number of facilities? Yeah, is that
level
in
one
cultivation? We're talking about the size of canopy.
So I'm basically talking under manufacturing.
So there were no limitations or setbacks for manufacturing. They would be allowed anywhere in the overlay zone in any quantity.
Okay. So then let's talk about level one, level two. I think the council at the last meeting said let's not eliminate level two until we have more information. I think staff provided some information, but it wasn't, I don't think, a full vetting and discussion. I think you did have a recommendation that if we were to consider regulating level two, I think your only recommendation was that it be commercial, have a commercial grade laboratory, correct?
Correct.
And what's everyone, and I would say, given the overlay area, that we might even want to talk about a 500-foot setback if for level two from sensitive uses.
I'll tell you. I would just need, I'd want a little more information on level two than
but,
what we have.
Yeah, but I think, you know, we're not, are we going to rule it out to say we don't want to regulate it, or are we going to say let's investigate, because you still have to look at the environmental, throwing chemicals out there and giving anecdotal stories is not a thorough analysis, at least. I think if we're saying let's keep it in, but let's look at if you condition it with commercial-grade laboratories and a greater setback, because I can tell you that Blue Line coming up to those lots on Messina Court does give me some pause for concern, and I don't certainly want anyone in this community to take a look at that and then say, you know, hey, we want to really say we're providing protection, and we want to do this in a responsible manner and one that preserves the safety of our community.
The way I was looking at all of the questions about number of manufacturers, number of dispensaries, square footage of cultivation, in my mind, we're going to understand, everybody's going to understand this world so much more a year from now, 2 years from now, and 5 years from now. Could we do something that ramps up, such as we will allow level one, and maybe we will, so many level ones in the first year, so many per second year, and revisit after year three, or something like that, and do it that way, because then maybe it would give citizens more comfort, too, that we're starting small and we're going to see how it affects the city, and then we're going to let it increase year by year. That was just what I was thinking, all those methods. And as far as level one versus level two, again, I mean, there probably, we don't know of, a huge level two accident, but there also have not been that many of these facilities so far. So maybe we allow level one, and maybe we say level two needs to be before the council or come in on a case-by-case basis so that we can really assess that applicant.
Well, and I think that's what we're doing, actually. This is going to say this is allowed in this area, provided it meets certain performance standards and land use standards. And I think each one of these are going to be a case-by-case basis.
Okay.
So we're not going to be so prescriptive that someone walks through the door and says, I have a level two and I meet everything and give me a permit. It's going to be scrutinized. At least that's the way it's typically done. So
okay.
I think what we're doing is trying to set up a process that does allow that. So I think it's just a matter of, is it level one or level two, and let's get more information on level two before we rule it out. Because if you're saying a commercial-grade laboratory, and if we're talking about greater setbacks, minimizes that potential, and someone's willing to invest that to move forward, then let's just take a look and see what that looks like, and I think we're at least keeping all options open with respect to that. But
yeah, I would be fine with that.
I don't know. Council majority, what do you guys want to?
I'm supportive of going in that direction with the overriding caveat that we started with our master fee schedule. Simpler and more understandable is going to be preferable.
And understand. But like I said, we're given direction.
Yep.
We still need to see what the ordinance looks like. I can tell you I've pulled a couple of existing ordinances. I think I pulled something from the city of San Jose and the city of Oakland, and they've got some pretty interesting performance standards, and I would hope that staff would utilize some of those in the crafting of this ordinance. Matt, you have something?
And just to be clear, with that direction, staff would incorporate the level two within the draft ordinance. So we'd be doing further research, gathering further information, and bringing it back to the council. But given the direction, we would incorporate level two formally within the draft ordinance and work through the process with that in mind.
Subject to these provisions.
Correct.
And regs. Okay. All right. So I think that addresses your questions and clarifications on manufacturing, warehouse distribution, testing, correct, Bruce?
Correct.
Okay, so now we can talk about commercial cultivation and nurseries. I think we're good on location. This is from sensitive uses. Looks like we've got a state requirement. You're going to get clarification on that, whether that's property line to property line or whether it's intervening structure to intervening structure and all of that, correct?
But there is a 600.
Yes.
Well, okay.
I, with your permission, Mayor and Council, we'll research that and come back to you with
very good
definitive response.
Thank you, City Attorney.
I had a question just as we look at cultivation. If one of you on the water committees could refresh my memory as far as acre feet, you know, for example, what's our overall allotment of acre feet versus what these numbers are saying here?
So, and perhaps
Bruce, or even Mr. Ray.
Yeah, I think in round numbers, the annual supply is 2,200 acre feet per year.
Okay, thank you.
For the whole city, correct? Mm-hmm. Mr. Ray, are you in concurrence?
Yes.
Okay. Three in agreement, we're good. Okay. So, location, this is from sensitive uses. I think we got some research analysis. The limitation on use, and this is really discussing number of facilities and maximum square footage. So, staff, you're basically saying most are going to the state allowed maximum, which is 2,200 square feet, correct?
I mean, there's no guarantee that. I mean, I think we've had a couple of local people indicate that their cultivation areas could be considerably smaller than 22,000 square feet, but I think for the most part, and talking to some of the people in the industry, that's what we're likely to see. So, again, you can just put a number of square feet on it,
mm-hmm.
or a number of, quote, licenses. That's up to the council.
And just to clarify, the 22,000 is canopy, or 22,000 is?
Canopy.
Site. Okay, 22,000 is canopy. Okay.
Well, what I'm looking here, it says this is square feet, so.
Square feet of canopy.
Okay, let's get a clarification.
There are three licenses. One is 3,000 and under. Second one is 2,000 and under. And the highest one is 22,000 and under.
Okay. So what direction does the council want to give? Because obviously we can still modify this as it comes forward in the process. But let's give them some direction.
I think we should go total square footage, personally, rather than licenses. That's just off the top of my head.
Oh, you're talking about the cultivation area total, mm-hmm. so not a maximum number on the square foot of the building.
Well, there is a maximum number of square footage already built into state law, right?
Right.
So they couldn't have any more than 22,000 square feet under canopy already. Is that correct?
Actually, state law permits 22,000 per license.
Per license.
And there's nothing that prohibits a 200,000 square foot building of having 10 growers growing.
Oh.
Cultivating in the under the same roof, under 10 different licenses.
Well, there you go.
Okay.
And if the council is inclined to move staff in the direction of considering a cultivation canopy cap, for a lack of better words, for the entire city, I think rather than trying to wrestle with numbers today, perhaps a direction to staff as to what the available area is and what percentage of that available area you would have some interest in seeing as a limitation.
Okay.
The only caveat is, again, for the CEQA review, if you put a cap on it, that's what the CEQA review would typically analyze. So if you're fluctuating between should it be 100,000 or 200,000, give us the direction to at least go with the 200,000, because then the analysis under CEQA would be at 200,000. If you want to reduce it, that's fine. If you say we're going to do 100,000 and you get the public hearing process and now you want to go to 200,000, yes. Now we need to go back and amend the environmental document.
I see. So, but if we were to just go with so many licenses, then we wouldn't really know what the how much water usage we could possibly be looking at, correct?
Correct. I mean, that's because, as City Attorney mentioned, I mean, you can get a license for 2,000 square feet. So at least, again, most cities we looked at, they just capped the total square footage of canopy. That could end up being a lot of licenses or only
so,
a few.
So what was the range with respect to that total number of cultivation area?
The only one that comes to mind rather is King City was 1.4 million square feet. there were obviously a lot that were less than that.
So for King City, was that in indoors and outdoors?
Indoors only.
Indoor only. Okay.
King City is a unique situation where there are large warehouses that were used for drying garlic and for other commercial processing uses, which are sitting vacant for various reasons. And there's a lot of land where additional ones could be built. So there are structures that are 8 acres big in area that could house a lot of licenses. So that the number is very, very large. And again, some type of direction perhaps to staff. Let's say we have 1 million square feet available in the city. If we add up all the parcels that are, and I'm just throwing out a number. I don't know what that number is, and potentially maybe some direction to staff to cap it at, let's say, 75% of that, or something that we can put a maximum cap for purposes of CEQA review would be useful if that's what you wish to consider.
Yeah.
So towards what the city attorney was mentioning, maybe I'll throw out an option and see where the rest of us go.
Okay.
Is I seem to recall the area down in that jurisdiction to be about 43 acres, or was it closer to 55 acres?
70 acres.
70 acres. So if we look at so to attachment one, which has no setbacks from anything, that's approximately 70 acres?
Correct.
Okay. Well, then my calculation is not going to be nearly as easy, because I was going to go towards the 440,000 cultivation area in square feet, which would have been about 10 acres.
So let's do this. I think staff do an analysis on the overlay area. Let's get the acreage. Let's identify structures down there. Like, for example, you know, Central Coast Printing, you know, Pacific Crossing. These are structures that are on these. So we're not looking at a bunch of vacant lots. We're really looking at an area. So let's do the analysis of what's vacant and what's underutilized and then come back with what that acreage is. And let's just say 50% of that could potentially be used for a cultivation area. At least we could start to quantify this and do this based in reality, because I would, even though I'm sure this many of you would say this is very lucrative, I don't see folks who have successful businesses, especially Pacific Crossing, demolishing an existing structure to grow medical or recreational marijuana. So I think we need to have a thorough analysis of the area and let that dictate. And I think that's kind of what the city attorney was saying, right? I think we just take that and let's base it in reality. Okay?
Well, and one thing the city attorney mentioned was just once we do set a number or do give out a number of licenses, going down is going to be quite difficult. I mean, are any of the cities that you looked at starting at a certain number and increasing as they see if these are the good neighbors they set out to be and they are the harmless businesses they set out to be, or are people just starting up high and letting it go?
In general, it was very common to see cities that ramped up. They started at two dispensaries, and then after 2 years, they were going to go to four. So that was a common approach. I can't recall on cultivation whether or not there were ramp-ups. I think there were in a few instances. The cultivation, again, at least in my read, had more to do with water availability. Yeah. That's why King City ended up at the number they did. It was how much water do they have.
Right.
And just because we go with that number, we're just saying that's the maximum amount we would allow. That doesn't mean that it's going to get to that point, correct?
That is correct.
So we would still be able to say, well, that's our maximum, but we aren't going to give out
right.
all the square footage. That would be within our process where where applicants come in and we could say no.
This is for CEQA review, so we get approved for that.
The answer to that question is no. If an ordinance has a cap of a million square feet of cultivation, we would be bound to accept applications until that area is entitled.
I think that's what makes me lean more towards the ramp up in all aspects that we can, because I just am not sure how this is going to play out.
And that's where the 50%, I think, is something that you, as the mayor pointed out, because that percentage can be increased as time goes on if it's found that that's necessary.
And if environmental review shows that we don't have the water, or they show that they can do the recycling to show a neutral or net zero effect, then those are factors we consider in establishing a maximum and issuing a permit. So we're going to have property, we're going to have development standards as any other development project would be subject to. Okay? I see a puzzled look on your face.
One on mine, too.
Well, I guess I'll tell you the scenario I'm worried about, and you can tell me if we're covering it. Everyone of you I've met with is lovely. But, you know, what if all these businesses start coming in and we decide we don't like it and our citizens don't like it? And I would like to start with two or three that people really support and they're really behind and then build up. Is that what we're able to do with this ordinance or not?
So are you talking dispensaries or are you talking...
I'm talking...
Nurseries. Are you talking
all
cultivation?
All of it.
So let's do the analysis. Let's say 50%. Let's figure out what the number is later. I think we start to get into some very interesting territory if we say we're only going to do one or two, and then we have to figure out who do you pick, who do you select, how do you do it in a fair manner. But I think that this is enough direction for staff to move forward, to come back with thoughtful analysis of the area that we've obviously identified as the targeted area, and what is the potential. And then if that's further reduced due to water availability and other things, then we can make those adjustments. I'll just kind of throw you out a nice little anecdote or a little story. The city manager for the city of Santa Maria gave a presentation recently to the Santa Maria Chamber of Commerce and Economic Development. He basically said that, and I know, stick with me here, building houses doesn't make a lot of sense because they are basically, you have to pay for the services to provide that house. He basically said you have to build 300 homes to pay for one police officer or one firefighter. So we're talking about the fiscalization of land use. We'll take a look and see how that all plays, because when people are going to come out and say, hey, you're allowing this and you're allowing them to use this much water, how does that relate to houses and that type of development? So I think there's going to be some discussion. I know I took a long way around to get there, but let's let staff come back with that information. We'll have more information to have a discussion and establish the maximum number of area as well as number of licenses with respect to at least the cultivation and nurseries discussion, because water will be a big factor in that.
And I'm going to need more education on how that all works as well.
Okay. So I think the direction is for staff to do the analysis of this area, determine what is vacant, what is underutilized, so we can have a realistic number of what the potential is down here, and then 50% of that. And if we need to adjust it down or up based on other factors, we can do that. Okay? So, personal cultivation, well, now we're talking about commercial medical marijuana, and I believe we are talking about, I think last time we talked about regulating personal, even though we know it's allowed by state law, we don't want to.
And that's the attorney. Staff is looking at some additional regulations to personal growth. I mean, consistent with your directions, we're obviously have ordinances in place which permit a certain amount of personal growth. We do have the ability to control how that's done and how it's secured, and the ordinance will look at that.
And I think there was some council direction previously that said if you're going to allow personal growth, that it has to be indoors, not outdoors,
right,
and
correct.
That the structure have to comply with the setbacks, and there will be other standards that we would
right. It has to
correct.
Be secured. It has to be right. Indoors. Right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. The only comment I had written on that was that, and I'm not sure how other cities are handling it, but I really don't want all of this enforcement to fall, all of these enforcement duties to fall on our police, because this is probably going to be a huge job. The more people have talked to me about this, the more people, a lot of people are already, you know, trying to grow marijuana in their backyards, and it's impossible to know every single person. I'm just wondering if we need to put somewhere in our ordinance that some of the tax dollars, or there's going to be some sort of enforcement officer or compliance department, almost like a code enforcement person.
Bingo. City attorney.
Thank you. The regulatory ordinance for the commercial growth and the state law allows us to recover any costs related to permitting of these type of establishments. And staff will be looking at what are the projected costs of monitoring, inspection, compliance checks, all of those things that are related to those types of operations. And that will be included.
Yeah. So once we adopt this, we'll look into the enforcement side of this and whether that is increasing police or code enforcement. I think that's something we definitely are going to have a conversation around.
All right. Yeah. Other than that, I agreed with what was suggested in the report.
Okay. And I think there are, staff, you have direction on that. I'm not going to belabor that. I definitely want to make sure that there's a discussion regarding the distribution, transport and delivery. I think that just get clarification on that. I thought there was you alluded to it was already allowed under code, but I think what we certainly want to do is have an ordinance that is not only prescriptive, but it's clear. I think when we end up having ordinances that have all these gray areas is when we start to get into an issue of staff making an interpretation that then gets appealed to the city manager, which then gets appealed to the planning commission, which ultimately gets appealed to the city council. So I think to the extent that we can be very clear with respect to transport and delivery, I think this ordinance will be a lot better. Agreed?
Agreed.
Are you talking about transport and delivery in the sense of regulating mobile dispensaries? Or
no? I think mobile dispensaries are not allowed, and I would think that if I'm hoping, and maybe this is a council discussion point, if we are going down this road to craft these regulations to deal with commercial medical marijuana now, and ultimately if recreation is approved, that the last thing we would want to do is give someone an unfair advantage and allow mobile dispensaries. So I think right now they're not allowed, but is that something the council wants to consider?
I'm sorry, I thought we were talking about transport at this point. So,
well, she brought up transport, but then she brought up the medical mobile dispensaries.
I was just asking if you were talking about transportation in that sense, but he was talking about a different sense.
Well, I thought you brought up mobile dispensaries.
Right, because I was wondering if that's what you... Because I am concerned about mobile dispensaries. From what I understand, they're already happening. I think they'd be extremely hard to regulate. But I've also heard many arguments in favor of them, and so I would like them to be addressed in some manner.
Well, they're happening... what we said earlier, they're happening illegally, and that will be enforced. And I think we are making a huge effort to regulate those that have brick and mortar. So to me, at least, and you guys, one view, that if we're going to go through this effort, we're going to determine a number of dispensaries and number of cultivation, then I'm not sure why we would want to allow mobile dispensaries if someone else is willing to invest and invest a lot of money to do this, as opposed to someone just coming in, parking on a street corner or
right.
delivering.
But so, what about a person in our town who's already licensed being able to deliver? Like a brick-and-mortar dispensary being allowed to deliver to people within the town?
No, that's delivery. That's not considered mobile dispensary.
So that would be permitted.
If I could.
Yes.
I think it was our intent that if you're going to allow dispensaries, that those dispensaries in the city limits would be able to have deliveries. And I think a number of the information that was submitted, they would all like to have some kind of delivery from their brick-and-mortar outlet. And that means that any sale that occurs, even if it's not on Grover Beach, the point of sale is the dispensary in Grover Beach, which means we collect the tax from that.
Yes.
So therefore, if you have brick-and-mortar stores that are delivering medical marijuana, then you might want to prohibit medical marijuana deliveries from outside of the city, because you've already provided that in your city limits, and you can control that through your regulatory process, whereas you can't control the mobile dispensary that's located outside of the city limits.
I would be fine with what you suggest. I just want to make sure people who need deliveries can get them somehow.
Yeah, we're not saying not to allow deliveries. What we're saying is it's sort of the equivalent of a food truck. We're not going
right.
to allow
okay.
the food truck to come into Grover Beach. So they may park in, nah, I'm not
right.
going to pick on neighboring communities. That would not be nice of me. Anyway, Mayor Pro Tem.
I'm in agreement with that discussion. I just was on a different page there for a couple minutes regarding transport from a cultivator to a dispensary, and then from a cultivator to a manufacturer, and then from manufacturer to dispensary. That's where I thought you were going with the transport question. So,
yeah. And I think when you get the definition in there, I think state law defines transport different than delivery. So,
and recognizing that transport and transportation would be doesn't necessarily only include City of Grover Beach manufacturers or cultivators. In other words, there may be product brought into the city for testing or manufacturing.
Right.
There may be product brought out of the city into other jurisdictions,
right.
et cetera. But we'll look at that and address
yeah.
it.
And to kind of use Bruce's example there, the originator of that business would still be in Grover Beach. So where they transport it to is dependent upon their business model, for lack of a better term. But the point of sale origination for that manifest package would still be Grover Beach.
If it originated
here. Or it came into the city
okay.
and then moved from somewhere else. To be determined.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Everyone still good? I know it's 8:27. All right. Dispensaries. We're okay with the location.
Well,
Jeff, you had brought this up earlier. We had talked last time.
And I'd like to talk about that a bit.
So what do you have?
Well, when I had envisioned this, I had really kind of thought of the dispensaries as being more like a pharmacy.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just, it just seems to me that, first of all, we're kind of creating like this cannabis zone. And I just don't know that from my perspective, that is really a appropriate place for what I would consider if I or my aunt or my mom had to go to a pharmacy and get their meds. I didn't know that we were just limiting it to specifically that spot. It seems to me that there are other suitable areas for a respectable medical marijuana dispensary in this town. So I just thought maybe we could have that discussion. I'm not saying Grand Avenue, but there are, I think, other areas where it could be appropriate.
So would that be a dispensary only Mm-hmm. Or mobile delivery,
yes,
from that dispensary.
Yes.
So if a dispensary and a combined licensure cultivator could still locate down in this area from that scenario.
Yes.
Okay.
But I'm talking about simply a dispensary.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. And I think I had, as part of the discussion last time, had brought up the potential for Grand Avenue. So I'd be and/or potentially portions of 13th Street, depending upon on the commercial zones and so forth.
That's kind of what I was thinking as well.
So
it's on the bus, you know, on the bus route, and easy for folks to get to, and like that.
So I will say the only comments I've gotten from folks in the community that have said, well, what the heck are you guys doing? And then when I said we were not considering Grand Avenue, they basically said, oh, good, I thought you were going to put them all up in the Grand Avenue. I guess my thought was, if we have an overlay zone, and this is kind of getting to some of what Mary's been arguing for, is I think on 4th Street, it's an area that's underutilized, has a potential to be a very safe area that could be upgraded and improved. It's probably less than 3 minutes from police and fire. It's less than 2 minutes from Grand Avenue. I think something on 4th Street in that area is very safe and could accommodate a use. I would say even all along portions of Highland Way. I think I brought this up at the last meeting. So just my general thoughts, because I'm only one person. I think, and this gives us a chance to get these businesses in, demonstrate that they are clean, and then I think once we educate the community, we start having that discussion regarding whether it's 13th or Grand.
And I'm not saying it's not safe.
Yeah.
My point. It just isn't what I really had envisioned when I started thinking of actually medical marijuana as,
okay,
you know, as someone using it in a prescriptive way, going to like a pharmacy.
Mm-hmm.
That would make people comfortable to go into a pharmacy type setting. But as long as we're open to looking at other areas.
So, as I said,
as you said, I'm just one person. But
no, I think that's very valid, Karen, and I'm almost wondering.
But Grand was not my Grand. Absolutely, I mean, certainly it's up to public opinion, and I you know, that to me holds a great deal of weight. But Grand Avenue would not be one of my choices.
So, but here's a question, because there are setbacks associated with dispensaries, right?
Right. I was just going to ask, if we're looking at maps, wouldn't Attachment 3 really be reflective of what we're talking for dispensaries? Not aside from the new information we're thinking of tonight with the building setbacks, but I think,
yes,
Attachment 3, so it would be more limited for a dispensary than what we're looking at there.
Attachment 2 shows a 100-foot setback from residential zones.
But doesn't it have to be over 600 from the school?
Yes, but that attachment only applies. This is going to apply no matter what. State law says 600 feet.
Right. So that's
so those,
really
those lots would be eliminated immediately.
Right.
For dispensary only.
So
correct. So, but then going back to Miriam's point is the mayor's point was if we went back to actually Exhibit 1, and carved out, there's a line, Exhibit 1, sorry. So, and then there's a kind of a faint black line between, going from the L and Farrell down there. That would be the 600-foot setback from the school, correct? Yeah. So that was going towards what you were saying.
Yeah.
Is that that would be, that big bold line is dispensaries are
right
south,
right,
and west.
Right.
Right. So isn't that what's shown in our attachment 3 from looking at that,
except for the fact that in that 600-foot setback could still be manufacturing,
correct,
cultivation,
but
just anything,
but dispensaries could not, so dispensaries are even more limited than others.
And where I'm going with that is when you start to look at the actual land use map and the location of housing, Grand Avenue, based on state law, we probably couldn't put a dispensary on Grand Avenue if you're talking about 600 feet, because there are, in certain instances, residences that are probably within a block of grain.
Or but schools. It's just schools.
Schools, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
So, okay, I take that back.
I see Karen's point, and I was feeling the same way on certain. I see what you're saying, especially, you know, just talking to some of the people who want to go into the business and their safety, and they will be taking in cash and just where they might be comfortable. I don't know. I'm picturing one of these places maybe looking like the chiropractic office on Grand, not arguing for Grand, but thinking like 13th or something like that. But what I thought in my mind was what I see in Attachment 3 as being a beginning and letting the businesses come in and the people of Grover Beach being okay with this. And then people could always apply for a zoning change on 13th, and then we could talk about that when that happens.
And I think I would go in that direction as well to say, and it goes back to, in some respects towards timing of when this comes back to us, in the fact that if we expand to Grand and to 13th, it's going to take staff another layer of mm-hmm. review and timing. Mm-hmm. So if we want this to come back in a
true.
In within a window, then I think we start here.
That makes sense.
Agreed. Okay. And I was thinking setback from residences, but that's 100. We were talking about a setback of 100, not 600. Thank you for that, clearing that up, City Attorney. Okay, so we are in agreement. We're going to start here, and then based upon how things get executed. And
do we need to talk about now a number of dispensaries? Or are we going to address that at a different – because you wanted that, or are we going to talk about that another time?
Staff would love clarification on the number of dispensaries.
Wow. Just when I thought that light at the end of that tunnel was a train. Got it. All right.
So let me throw out a number.
Sure.
So just to kind of weighing in what I've heard our community development director say and other council members say is for the purposes of CEQA, let's use 6. Just throwing out a number because then that if and then when it comes back to us, then we can say to the first year, to the second year, to the third year, or if we want to go 1-1-1.
But so applying to CEQA is just is saying this is how many you could environmentally do, and then we would be able. What if we applied to CEQA for 6 and said, well, we only want 3? We can't
then
do that.
When the ordinance comes back to us, then we say CEQA's reviewed it for 6. That's too many in the city. We limit it to the first year, to the second year, or one the first year, one the second. And so, but we've and what Bruce was saying earlier, it gives him the opportunity to review it from a capacity standpoint in the city, and then we can set the number in the future.
I would be okay with that. Now I'm going to turn and look at the city attorney and see what his face looks like.
Look at the mayor.
Okay. I was about to say I'm recovering time.
Yeah, what
do you think? How about 4? How about 4?
5?
I like 4.
I'm really trying not to go down the planner road to go, fine, but let's have some distance separation from them, but I'm not going to go down and make it that complicated. I think that, look, we are moving forward. We're trying to be responsible. We want to do this in a rational, reasonable manner. I just don't want us to get to the point where the general public that has been largely accepting of where we're going now says, you're trying to put these dispensaries all over the city or all in a certain area, and now we've got folks coming in. So, and maybe I'm off base there. I just think based on the feedback I've been getting, I don't want to – this is something I'm not really – I think we're already pushing the edge. I'm not ready to jump off the edge, jump over the edge. So I think I understand I understand the logic under CEQA, mm-hmm. studying the max and approving something less. But I don't know. I guess in my mind, I think I was kind of envisioning this is the area – I was originally thinking 2, but I think 4 maybe makes sense. So.
But that being said, just because we apply for four. Maybe when we assess this afterwards, we will say maybe one per year for 4 years or something along. Or
sure.
Maybe two,
yeah.
We stop at two.
That's correct. Matt?
And just to add that when the council is considering the final ordinance for adoption, we will have the regulatory ordinance and the resource needs also as part of the conversation. So we'll be able to tell you what the impact is on police, on code enforcement, on mm-hmm. planning, so that the council will be able to factor that in when landing on a final number at that point.
Okay. That sounds good.
We'll look forward to that analysis.
Four.
Wow. Where'd you have dinner tonight?
Starbucks.
You're being really creative. I like it. But challenging us. I like that. All right. So, four. We'll look at four. We'll make adjustments as needed. And I would say based on environmental factors as well as practicality.
Yep.
It's like I said, we're not looking at a blank slate with vacant lots all over the place. We're looking at it. We need to figure out what is, in fact, the potential.
Yeah. And Mayor, Council
yes.
members, no limitations on size of any of them, right?
There's no
other than the setbacks.
There's nothing in the state statutes that has a minimum or maximum, is there?
Not that I'm aware of, but I believe most cities have put some limitation on them. I mean, in my limited experience, 2,500 square feet is, it's a retail shop. It's not likely to be very large.
I guess I'll go back to my question kind of on the level one, level two, is do we have minimum building sizes for other uses in
just either minimum or lot coverage.
So basically, it's going to be lot coverage. It's going to be parking requirements, and we know parking. When you take a look at land use, parking typically takes about a third of the site.
Mm-hmm.
So if you look at a 5,000 square foot lot that's on 4th Street, it's going to be a pretty small dispensary. But if you look at an interior lot on Houston, it's going to be a little bigger. But if you were putting up a dispensary, would you want to be right in the middle, or would you want to be on a very well-traveled street like 4th or even Highland?
And as a practical matter, the smaller ones are easier to secure and provide all the measures that are necessary.
So let's let the market and the experts dictate, as opposed to trying to regulate every little bit of this, right?
I think so.
Okay. I think we're, with respect to the 100-foot setback, I think that's what the council direction would give me for, and I think we're still okay with that, right? And I think that's definitely residences on Messina and in that location. I would say, from a planning standpoint, I don't know if it makes good sense to have that setback from non-conforming residential, because isn't the very nature of non-conforming mean that it should be brought into conformance as soon as reasonable?
Correct.
Okay. All right.
So to clarify, 100-foot setback from residential zones, or in other words, I think it's clear that you're going to need a 100-foot setback for dispensaries we're talking about. Excuse me.
So
here you would have it along the Calvin Court neighborhood. Here you would have it along Messina.
I think that's the map Marion referred to, and I think, yeah.
And then also on Farrell as well. That's what I'm really trying to get to.
Well, I was talking about attachment 3 because for dispensaries, we have to have 600 feet from the yellow also.
From the school. But for purposes of writing the ordinance, we would just say that it would be the entire overlay area, and then it's always going to be 600 feet from any school. If this school goes away and another one comes, that state law will always apply. So that's not really going to change your overlay.
Okay.
You're going to just apply state law to it.
Bruce, just clarifying, the 100 feet on Farrell includes Farrell Road, correct?
Correct.
So it goes to the northern edge of the right-of-way of Farrell, to 100 feet. It's not 100 feet from the southerly.
Parallel 60 feet of right-of-way, so it's really only going 40 feet. It basically is eliminating all the lots that are adjacent to Farrell. Yeah.
And in the northwest corner where the it's commercial CR, that's still residential?
No, that's coastal R2.
So
that's residential.
So that is residential also, right? Okay, thank you.
Yeah. Is that is this 100 this 100 feet is not required by law. This is us.
This
correct.
Is us.
Correct.
Okay. So in effect what you're really talking about is 30 40 feet if that from the southern edge of Farrell.
Basically it would avoid having a dispensary immediately adjacent or across the street from a residential zone.
Yeah. But that doesn't take the entire parcel out of play.
Exactly.
Right? It just means the business, the that maybe is they correct. Put their parking lot in the front instead of the back.
It'll be a matter of how we measure the setback.
It's parcel that, on the that will be up to you to determine. Generally speaking, it is boundary line to boundary line. But if you direct us to look at it otherwise, then we can do that.
Intervening structure, since this is a setback we're establishing and the state is not. I think that is a good place to start. Sound good? Okay. I think we're in agreement with the two-step process, discretionary permit and regulatory permit. How do you all feel? Should the council be the reviewing authority for use permits with the recommendation for Planning Commission, or should the Planning Commission be the ones that would approve it subject? And then obviously if someone didn't like that decision, they could appeal to the council.
I guess it would depend on the number we're going to come up with.
So perhaps we start with, let's make the council be the reviewing authority with a recommendation from Planning Commission, given that this is new territory. Mm-hmm. City Attorney, do you have anything?
I was going to make an observation that we don't have any other process where that is in place currently.
Yes. No. Very good. Okay. I think we're good on that. And yes, to design standards for older and new industrial buildings. I think, Bruce, you pointed out there are some development standards in place for a vast majority of this area. I think we certainly want to do that and utilize any standards from successful ordinances that are being that are in effect today. I think that covers everything that I had. Did I miss anything, staff? Council?
No.
Okay.
Just my obvious question of schedule.
And I can jump into that item.
Again,
this has been the fifth consecutive meeting where the council has tackled the issue of commercial medical marijuana, either ordinance or tax measure, and this has been a significant effort for the council and for staff, and rightly so. It's an important policy area, important priority for us. Back in July, we identified a 4 to 6 month time frame for drafting the ordinance, bringing it to the Planning Commission, bringing it to the council. So that puts us into the November to January-ish time frame. So I think given where we are now in early September, we would work on the ordinance drafting, beginning the environmental review process, and aim to have it to the Planning Commission by the end of this calendar year to begin the public hearing process with the Planning Commission, have it be able to take it and make a recommendation that would go to the council beginning in early 2017. I think we could look at that in the January time frame to be able to then have that be in place, have the regulatory ordinance also be drafted, and to the council bringing in the resource impact so that we can tell you what we think this will take from a staffing and resource standpoint, and have that be also reflecting what happens with Prop 64 and the recreational side of things. So that's the time frame, I think, in general that we would be looking at. We will be hustling on drafting the ordinance as soon as later this week to begin that process. But ultimately, the Planning Commission will need to weigh in later this year.
Okay. And we'll look for places where we can expedite if possible. Correct. You good?
Yep. Expedite right. as possible.
Well, I think it's going to be obviously depends on level of environmental review.
Right.
So maybe they probably won't do it with the neg deck. It'll probably mitigate the neg deck. Okay. Thanks everyone for being patient. We're working through this, and it's not a perfect process, but it is a process. that will allow input and feedback. So with that, I think staff, you have sufficient direction?
We do.
Okay, very good. Why don't we take a 10-minute break?
One more.
Yes, I'll be right back.
Wow.
We're going to reconvene the Grover Beach City Council meeting Tuesday, September 6, 2016, and we had just concluded item number 9. So we're going to move on to item 10, which is the Capital Improvement Program update. Public Works Director Ray, you have the floor.
Good evening. Thank you, Honorable Mayor and City Council. I'm Greg Ray, Public Works Director and City Engineer. So I'll just start with a general outline. This report is intended to provide the Council and public with a status report on major accomplishments in the capital improvement program. The report focuses on higher profile projects, but a summary of all capital projects is included as attachment 1 to your report, along with a map showing all the fiscal year 17 projects, which hopefully you're finding full of projects. In addition, staff is providing information on major policy questions and other challenges that have arisen as a result of the active and recently completed projects. With a reminder, this report is not intended to solicit policy direction from Council on these items at this time. And so, a little background, what is the Capital Improvement Program, or the CIP? And the CIP outlines a schedule of expenditures for major projects programmed over a 5-year period, that's fiscal year 17 through 21. And the highlight would be the fiscal year 17 CIP identifies 21 program projects with a fiscal year 17 budget of $13 million and representing over $20 million in total expenditures. And if this helps you, that comprises approximately half of the city's total expenditures for the year. The CIP is presented in categories, and so the remainder of my report, I will follow the categories, the major categories, in the order that they're presented within the document itself. And this is, again, an update on major projects in the order that they occur in the capital improvement program. So the first major category is parks, and staff is continuing to move forward on development of the Ramona Garden Park Playground project. But staff has encountered challenges in providing accessible parking and playground access within the projected project budget of $95,000. Staff will be bringing this project to Council for further discussion on September 19th. Staff has completed preliminary design on Golden West Park, and staff will be scheduling a community meeting at the park site to discuss the proposed project and receive community input in mid-September. I jumped. Under the second major category, streets, construction began in May on the Oak Park Boulevard Rehabilitation Project. When complete, the project will have replaced over 217,000 square feet of asphalt, or that's 3/4 of a mile of roadway between Grand Avenue and Highway 101. Final work will be conducted on the north portion of Oak Park Boulevard near El Camino Real or Highway 101 and is expected to resume next week with the installation of a water line in Oak Park Boulevard that will serve nearby sites planned for hotel development. The project is anticipated to be fully complete in October. And there's a nice photo of the completed Oak Park project. Looking north. I don't want to jump ahead. The total project cost of the Oak Park project was approximately $1.4 million, and reminder that it's funded almost entirely by grant funds administered by the San Luis Obispo Council of Governments. The first two phases of the Major K-funded street projects are now complete, and the third phase will be complete this month. All together, the first three phases of Major K work have provided maintenance and repair of 84 city blocks, or approximately 7 miles of roadway, which represents about 20% of all the city's local streets. We've made some pretty good progress. Other important infrastructure improvements addressed during construction included repair, replacement of water mains, water services and valves, infill of sections of sidewalk, and upgraded corner ramps to provide greater access for those with disabilities. This map shows it well. This map shows all work that's been completed in the first three phases. And hopefully you can see the little light blue dashed lines are a little difficult to see, but a fairly good cluster of them down here in the southeast portion of the city, and then scattered kind of randomly throughout the northern part of the city on the last phase there. And then this is a picture of North 13th Street. It's smooth, it's striped, it includes bike lanes and sections of infill sidewalk. So staff will begin design phase on the fourth Measure K-funded project in September, and we expect construction work to begin in April of 17. And the fourth phase includes 73 city blocks, or roughly 6 miles of roadway, and will involve all the streets identified by Council in 2015 as high-priority streets. Council may recall that the selection of streets was an extensive process that involved community input and also coordination with city projects and public utilities. The design effort will also include a separate process for addressing street narrowing options on Newport and Long Branch Avenue, and including further public engagement. And this map shows all of the streets, or shows the complete streets, identified for inclusion in the fourth phase project.
Greg, which streets, can you just say that for the benefit of the folks here and who are watching at home, can you quickly just mention those streets?
Well, best I can, I'm seeing 3rd Street, and let me try with the pointer here. There we go. 3rd Street from south of Grand Avenue. This is Long Branch, all the way to the northern city limit. This is the 4th Street up, so that would be Newport, which will be the subject of a narrowing discussion.
Okay.
Lost it. There it is. This is 16th, North 16th. North of Grand Avenue to Atlantic City.
Okay.
This is South 13th.
Okay.
South of Grand Avenue. I believe this is Mentone.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe this is South. I'll have to count up. Eighth. I was going to say 8th, but I just wanted to be sure. This is South 8th from Grand Avenue down to Farrell. And so, in keeping with Council's direction, you'll notice that these are major lengths of streets, not just sections as we've identified previously.
Okay. And this did not include Long Branch from 14th to...
I just simply missed it. It does. That's okay. This east-west segment right here.
Okay.
You'll recognize the school site right underneath the... maybe.
Yeah.
It's the school site underneath the cursor here. And that's,
okay, so it does go...
3rd Street, yes.
The entire of Long Branch, correct?
Yes.
Yes.
Thank you. Okay. Appreciate that.
No worries.
Right.
Thank you.
So I've already discussed this. So moving on, the next major category is facilities. The city recently completed lighting and landscape improvements at City Hall with the appropriately named Facility Improvement Project. The city is also working on other facility improvements this year, including installing a security gate at the fire station, replacing carpeting at City Hall, installing a new security gate at the Corporation Yard, and replacing flooring, window coverings, and other items at the fire station in conjunction with community partnership. And that is a picture of the new City Hall landscape, which, with the lighting project outside, is visible at night, so we probably didn't need the picture, but there it is. And then design of the public improvements for the Grover Beach Lodge project began in May. The work include, or sorry, the city's design consultant, Gary Taylor and Associates, is expected to have preliminary plans and cost estimates completed this month. The work includes construction of all the public improvements necessary to support the Grover Beach Lodge. And the work also includes the construction of the standalone conference center as presented to council at the August 15th meeting. And just because it's so pretty, this is the artist's rendering of the standalone conference center concept. The city's design consultant, Rick Engineering, began design of the train station expansion project in August. They're scheduled to complete the design by December of 16. And this project includes expansion of the train station in order to relocate bus services from the east side of the railroad tracks to a county-owned parcel just south of the existing station. The city is in the process of, again, negotiating a long-term lease with the county. Construction is scheduled to begin in early of 2017. And another artist rendering, this of the train station expansion project concept. The next major category in the CIP would be water systems. Council allocated funds for design of a pump station on the city's turnout from the Lopez water line and design of an intertie and metering station between Grover Beach and Arroyo Grande. Together, these projects are known as the Water Delivery Upgrades Project. Staff is currently seeking grant funds to partially offset the cost of design and also for construction funding. The project is needed to allow for delivery of supplemental water and will improve reliability of the city's Lopez Lake supply. Construction of the project called Upgrade of 2-inch and 4-inch Water Mains began in June, and the construction is expected to be complete this month. The project includes construction of 8-inch water mains to replace existing 2- and 4-inch mains in 19 city blocks and includes the addition of 9 new fire hydrants for enhanced fire protection. This $1.5 million project is being funded entirely by a community development block grant. And this is a series of pictures, in case you didn't get to see the work yourselves, showing how a water line is installed, beginning with the trenching to laying of the pipe. And you'll see the existing gas lines and water services crossing the trench in these pictures. And then ultimately, the beginning of the backfill of the pipe, and finally the final layers of backfill and then paving, ultimately. The final category for discussion tonight would be utilities. And the city's partnering with Digital West and the County of San Luis Obispo on a catalyst economic development project called the Grover Beach Municipal Broadband Network. This project will install a network of fiber optic conduits between the northern city limits and the industrial areas south of Farrell Road and also east on Rockaway Avenue to provide broadband service to City Hall, county buildings on Long Branch Avenue, and properties along West Grand. Bids for construction of the broadband network are due tomorrow. So as promised, I'm going to present some policy considerations that have arisen during the construction of these various projects, and I'll just briefly touch on a few of them. But as you can see, the city is making significant progress in advancing capital projects identified by the council and the community as key investments in the city's infrastructure. And at the same time, staff has identified a number of policy issues where staff believes it would be beneficial for the council to eventually provide further direction. If desired by council, staff could bring back one or more of these items to council for direction in a time frame based on the priority of the item and the necessity. And so just 5 bullet points here. Trees have been an interesting issue that have arisen not just as a result of the project, but I believe also as a result of the recent drought. We've had to remove a number of city trees and have had difficulty replacing some of them. But I will just mention that staff will continue, although we've authorized tree removals, we will continue the process of getting arborist reports to determine the possibility of saving trees, and we'll only remove trees where no other options exist. And that we will continue to seek opportunities to construct or to install trees back in those locations, especially in places where irrigation exists. Staff has previously advised council on anticipated waterline projects and identified street projects that should be potentially delayed pending replacement of existing water lines and services. Several of the high-priority streets identified for the next phase of rehabilitation by council do include waterline segments that would require major upgrades. Staff is anticipating that the waterline work could be delayed by as much as 10 years due to current budget constraints in the Water Enterprise Fund. And so as a result, in certain cases, staff is recommending to council that we continue with the proposed street rehabilitation projects rather than waiting for the waterline upgrades in the future. But also, obviously, there are other options potentially that could be considered, and so we could discuss this with the council at some later date. And council and the public have identified concerns about increased speeds associated with some of the newly repaved streets, and the potential solutions to those speeding issues are called traffic calming. Staff will continue to consider narrowing and other traffic calming measures in the design of future street improvements, and again, would welcome a conversation with council at some future date. During the current set of projects, council identified sections of sidewalk infill, a new sidewalk, and new bike lanes to include in the projects. The construction of bike and pedestrian facilities on a street are a component of what's known as the complete streets concept. And again, staff will continue to consider pedestrian and bicycle access and safety in the design of all upcoming projects, and will provide options for council consideration when the designs are being developed. But again, something for council's consideration, possibly at a future meeting. And ultimately, finally, staff encountered numerous locations where private improvements in the public right-of-way conflicted with proposed street and sidewalk improvements. These private improvements in the right-of-way are called encroachments. In many cases, staff required private property owners to remove many of these encroachments to allow for completion of the projects as designed. In other cases, we actually altered the project to avoid certain encroachments. The city has historically treated encroachments on a case-by-case basis, and as a result, the policy direction on this has been somewhat unclear. Again, a topic for potential future council discussion. And with that, concludes my report, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Greg. Very thorough staff report. Let's see if there's any questions. Mayor Pro Tem, questions?
Just a couple questions and a comment. First is I appreciate the update and would like, Greg, if you could put up the exhibit that's in our staff report just so that it kind of lingers behind you as we ask these questions so people can actually see how much work and progress we've made throughout throughout the last several years on all the progress. So it'll be the kudos over your shoulder.
I'm not sure I have the exhibit. let me just take a look. Will there be content within the PowerPoint that you'll be referring back to also?
Not necessarily.
I think he just wants it up there as the backdrop.
Yeah, we can probably pull it up online, Greg.
I mean, certainly have this, which is all the street projects.
That doesn't look nearly
but it's not nearly as dense as the other.
Gotcha. So as you're doing that, I'll...
Maybe I could send him an email. Can you pull it up from the city? Why don't you go ahead and ask your question?
Yeah, if you can go ahead.
Why don't you go ahead and ask your question, Jeff?
Yeah,
because we need to keep moving.
So on Oak Park Boulevard, the rehab project, just two things. There was a question about the timing of a Caltrans permit. Do we have an issuance date for that? I'm assuming that's for the waterline construction.
It involves originally it was for the construction of the Grover or City of Aurora Grande and Pismo Beach portions of the project, but then as you council recalls, in the middle of the project we decided to add the construction of the section of water main, and so that extended the need for the traffic control, and so it's now a dual permit. We expect to have that permit and actually be into construction on the water line next week.
Okay, great.
So. Okay,
thanks. Okay. Second question has to do with a member in of the public during public comment brought up street striping around schools. So, so do we have an estimate on the timing and when those are going to be completed? So that we can make sure the crosswalks and so forth are in use.
The layout has been completed. You'll probably notice we call them cat tracks, but the little white marks that show where the striping will be placed. The striping around the schools will be the first work that gets completed, and we anticipate that work will be completed later this week.
Okay, great. And then in going back to Oak Park and then 13th Street, in your traffic calming discussion, you talked about staff including traffic calming measures on North 13th. We'll be presenting options to the council later this fall for traffic calming on North Oak Park as well. So what's are we seeing issues already, or why are we immediately going into traffic calming when we've just finished the street? What's the because I don't remember, maybe I've misremembered the conversation, but I don't remember having a discussion about those as we were doing the bidding and so forth and plan prep.
That is correct. We had a discussion during the consideration of the design with regard to the crosswalk in particular, really two crosswalks. We also discussed one location where a bulb out was being constructed. But during the process, we received input both from the community and from the council to contemplate the construction of bike lanes, potentially the elimination of parking if necessary, the narrowing of travel lanes. There was some concern over excessive speeds and safety in the crosswalks, as well as some of the turning movements nearer to Grand Avenue. So we engaged a consultant, Omni Engineering, Omni Means, who's a professional traffic engineering consultant, to provide us with some concepts and some discussion for council, a presentation for council, that would look at some complete streets, again, back to the complete streets concept on Oak Park Boulevard that could also have a benefit on reduced speeds.
Okay, so it's kind of the compilation of all of those discussions. Okay.
Yes.
And then I recall that we've overlaid from, is that Ramona? I think down to the intersection. Is there a discussion? Is there a timing for bringing back the entrance of Grand Avenue and Oak Park improvements that carry beyond the intersection?
As of yet, no.
Okay. Okay, so that could be a discussion in the future. But
yeah, I think what we'll do is there was some discussion about policy issues and other. We can give them some direction.
Sounds good.
Okay.
And then more of a curiosity question for the broadband. This is my last one. Do we know how many plan holders there are for the bids tomorrow? Are we getting good traction from the plans and good interest?
We sent out an addendum. Which included, I believe it's four plan holders, but there could be more. That's a little bit stale information. So I'm going to say four or more.
Okay. Okay. Great.
That's good.
Yeah, that's all, okay. All I had. Thank you.
Karen?
No questions. Thank you. Nice report.
Very good. Mary?
Just a couple. Thanks for the report. The report mentioned that you're going to have a meeting at Golden West, and I was wondering if we would be notified of that meeting. I might try to attend.
Certainly. There'll be a press release, but it'll be on the city's website, and certainly I believe the city manager would be providing that in a Friday letter to
Okay. I just wanted to check because they're a very engaged group. And if one of us can make it, it'd probably be nice to hear what they have to say. Yes, and thank you for the update on the painted lines. Brenda mentioned earlier that crossing guards do not complain, which is not true. They've all complained to me. So I'm glad to hear it. And just looking at the part on the Grover Beach Lodge project, when do you think we'll hear about a finance plan?
City manager.
As a follow-up to the last council meeting where we presented the plans for the conference center and gave you an update on the project, we've been working with our state partners on putting together the parameters for an updated financing plan that reflect the updated costs that we have, as well as looking at our financing capacity in today's dollars. So we envision bringing that to the council, and likely in late September, early October. We have to finalize the dates and finalize the parameters, but I would say over the next two meetings, we will be likely bringing something forward to you.
Okay, cool. And then I think I read somewhere that we're going to talk about sidewalks at the next meeting. Is that true?
Regarding sidewalks, I know we're going to be talking about traffic safety and vehicular safety,
oh, okay.
which relates to pedestrian crossings and, by extension, sidewalks.
Okay.
This is in response to the tragedy that occurred a few weekends ago and work that the city was already doing to try to improve pedestrian safety across the city.
Okay. Because I know in your report, you mentioned, you know, we're spending all the dollars we have on sidewalk infill, and I guess just going forward, if we could really look at routes to school, for example, when North 10th was done, I walk that every day to get to the school, and it's very blind, and you have to go off the sidewalk. And also, even if you go over to 9th, it's the same thing. There's really no safe route to the Grover Heights Elementary, and just in thinking of 10th, that's a street with actually three schools on it. It's an access to Grover Heights, it's an access to Grover Beach, and you've got the Dandelion Preschool at the end of that, because I walk that whole street to deliver people. And I'm on and off the sidewalk like the whole time, and it's very blind. And so if we could, the next time we get any funds, look at 10th for maybe sidewalk infill. That's all. And also, if we could come up with some program in allotting dollars where maybe residents that have disabilities could fill out a form and somehow let us know where they are, and maybe that could be a consideration. For example, one of the speakers tonight, her son also lives right off of 10th. It's part of his school IEP that when he gets into 9th grade, he is supposed to make his way to Grover Beach Elementary, but he can't do that without a sidewalk. So having a safe route to school is really crucial for someone with a disability in particular.
So how about this? This is a council discussion. This is a policy direction. We allocated $200,000 for sidewalks, but we didn't come back and say how to apply that. And I know staff has been using some discretion and repairing sidewalks, and I don't know if that necessarily aligns with a lot of what you just said. So I think we need to give direction to come back, and let's have that discussion to talk about how we apply those dollars, because we're also, as you all know, one of the things that was identified in the self-help measure coming forward was safe routes to school. So we may have more dollars, but we need to give staff better direction as opposed to just fixing one segment of sidewalks, because the reason we talk about 13th Street is it's such a critical circulation path. And I think 10th, you brought that up, but that's a future discussion we need to have in sooner than later. Matt, did you have something?
Yeah, just to add to that, I think that's a good example of the sidewalk and complete streets policy area that Greg identified as a key area where we would like to get further council direction to help guide us in how to go forward. So
okay.
we'll bring that back at a future meeting.
Thank you. That's all I have.
That's it?
Yeah, okay. Thank you.
So, Greg, on the park on Golden West, who designed the park?
We did the design in-house, and I want to be clear about that. In looking at the funding that we had, the design in-house primarily addressed the safety issues. We heard first and foremost that there were safety concerns about the levelness and condition of the concrete in the park. So it's primarily, with available funding, a concrete replacement project that includes some very minor replacements and upgrades and
okay.
vegetation.
So what I would suggest, and hopefully there is council consensus around this,
the play equipment that was identified for Ramona Garden Park, which the Park and Recs Commission looked at, and we all know how that sort of unfolded. You know, they came back, and it was in the heart of the park where we have all these great concerts, and we've said put it in a different location. We were also told that it was going to be around 80 to 90,000, and now it looks like the number is closer to 150. So what I would suggest is if staff, you're coming back for further direction on that, let's couple that with Golden West. Because, you know, I think it sounds like there's a design that was dealing with a minimalist approach. And if we can't come up with additional resources on what's going on in Ramona, we may be able to talk about whether we shift funds to do something a little better in Golden West. But that's a discussion the council needs to have. Everybody okay with that? Okay. So let me keep moving. Jeff, you asked all the questions on Oak Park, so I'm not going to belabor that point. I think the one thing I do want to ask staff is, and let me say this, we've done a really good job of identifying streets and executing. I think the community is starting to see streets are done. However, now there's time that's elapsing between the last time we finished an actual street to having the next series designed. We got to figure out a way to kind of, I know there's a lot of work going on, but we still know the top priority in this community are streets, water, and homeless and other things, but streets. So what I would like to do is maybe when you come forward and you're talking about awarding the contract for design of these streets, I think the council needs to have some discussion regarding, is there an ability to break out Long Branch? I know we're talking about narrowing on Newport and Long Branch, and the reason I'm going to suggest that to us is that working with the Wallace Group, there was a concept laid out for low-impact development, which was a narrowing process. So, you know, I think we always talk about, and it's the old cliche, let's not reinvent the wheel if work's already been done. And I think Long Branch is a critical street in the southern part of the city in front of Grove Beach Elementary. And if we've got work that's done, I think Newport's going to take a lot more effort than Long Branch. So I think that's a conversation that council can have when you come back and talk about awarding that contract. Would that be more appropriate at the time, Matt?
I think we could build that into the item regarding the contract award and get council's guidance on breaking out Long Branch if that's your direction.
Is that so? Is there a consensus to do that, or what do you guys think?
I'm good with that approach.
Okay. So then I think also we'll want to have our discussion about the next series of streets that are identified for improvement, because if we're going to issue 2016, we really start to identify what's 2017. I know that Ms. Auer had come in earlier. And let me say for the record, because you made this comment, and I'm sure a lot of folks, you know, when people say something, we all tend to just say, oh, that's right. Let me say for the record that the staff, the council, the commission, the community have done a really good job of identifying what streets need to be done and the reasons for why those streets are done and the coordination of those streets with utilities. It is not an easy effort to upgrade water lines, to do other utilities, and do the streets. And I know that there was maybe one hiccup, but when you look at the number of streets under construction and what's been done, I would say staff and the consultant team have done a masterful job, and I want people to understand that. I know that she had alluded to there was no plan when, in fact, there is, and maybe that underscores the need for us to do better on our communication to residents, and I think we'll work on doing that. So with that said, what I'm thinking is maybe what we ought to do, and I know, Matt, this may be a lot, but maybe we start talking about themed meetings. So maybe the next meeting or when we have time, we identify a meeting, and let's say we dedicate it to streets. I think you talked about with the tragic accident that occurred on Grand Avenue, we do need to take a look and see if there's opportunities. With the improvement of North Oak Park and the smooth streets, I think, Karen, we can attest, people, when the streets are smooth, you know, I know potholes are a great way of traffic calming, but I don't think we want potholes. But really, so what I'm thinking, and, you know, and like I said, I'm going to say this, and please you all jump in. So maybe we have a meeting where we talk about streets and sidewalks, so then we can talk about the next list of streets under K-14. We talk about traffic calming. We talk about the discussion under complete street. I think it, staff, you're exactly right. The issue of encroachment and into the right of way is presenting challenges. I can give you a perfect example on North 13th where we put the sidewalk in, and yet when you get to Atlantic City, there is, and it looks very nice. I know if the owners of this home or the renters of this home are watching, it looks very nice, but the plants and the fruit and vegetables are in a public right of way, and we really need to be consistent in how we apply our standards, because number one job for us is to look at community safety, and that's not, you know, that's how do we get people from point A to point B in a safe manner, and we want to look at something that benefits the majority, not just a select few. So I think we have that conversation. And then I would say street trees are something we need to talk about, and whether I know in the past we had given direction for the Park and Rec Beautification Commission to take a look at that. So maybe it's time to do that again. So I think those are five topical areas we have a meeting, whether it's a regular meeting or a special meeting. I think at least we can kind of focus on that. Everyone okay with that? Then I would say perhaps we then turn to the whole discussion regarding water. I think, Daph, you appropriately pointed out that we have to upgrade water lines in North 16th, South 13th. And given the condition of the water fund, we really need to figure out a way to continue moving not only that infrastructure but the streets in a positive direction. So I think we talk about water, and if there's any other related topics, maybe, you know, Matt and we can work together on that. Does that sound good to everyone?
And I think to interject into that, that provides for a appropriate conversation point regarding either timing for trench moratoriums on streets.
Yes.
Or length of time or outreach prior to us doing work on a particular street. I think we've kind of touched on that, but that I think that would be the appropriate time for that discussion.
Okay. And I thought there was a third one, but I think those are the only two. Was there anything anyone else felt we needed to address based on? And I want to commend staff, because I think this is something we've talked about in the past, is identifying areas where we need to have some policy discussion so that we can give you direction so that you are certainly working in the direction that of the council's vision. And I think this is a really good thing to be doing. So, Matt, do you have anything? Did I miss anything? Or
I think you summarized it very well. I would just like to add that I want to commend Greg and his staff and the contracting team for all the work that they've done. In my 2 months here, I have seen so much take place where 50% of our budget this year is spent on capital improvements, which is a remarkable statement for any city to make. We are literally rebuilding our infrastructure from the ground up. Water lines, sewer lines, gas lines, sidewalks, streets. That is a remarkable statement for this city to make. And you drive around and you look at the map that's on screen, and it's remarkable to see what is being done and what will be done over the next several years. And to the mayor's point, we need to do a better job of communicating to our community about what's being done and highlighting the achievements. We are looking at doing some kind of public event coming up in the near future where we can acknowledge our successes and highlight the track record and be able to just celebrate the results of what the community has invested in our city and what the council has put forth in its leadership. So stay tuned. More information to come on that. So we will prioritize a discussion coming up on streets, sidewalks, traffic calming, encroachment, really tackle that with a lot of thoroughness and careful diligence, and bring that to the council at the appropriate time.
Sounds good. Okay. I think we are all, hopefully we're there's a consensus to move in that direction. So, okay, I think that is all we have on. Well, let me see if there's anyone from the public that would like to comment on this item. No one coming forward. Let me close it, bring it back. All right, we don't have any pool consent agenda items. How about council committee reports? Do anyone have any reports? Or
I have one.
Okay.
We hosted in Grover Beach. This is a homeless services oversight committee update that we as a committee put on a MASH event, Mobile Assistance Services for the Homeless, in Grover Beach. And it was an amazing success. There's just so many people to thank. I mean, I remember hearing about PASO doing this in a meeting and just thinking, we need this in South County so badly, and how is it ever going to happen? And, you know, five cities came together and one city stepped up and hosted it. So I'm going to have to give credit where credit is due. And I really thank our police chief for, you know, seeing this as an event for people, not something to be afraid of. It was a service event. I can't thank Hillside Church enough for offering a perfect space. We had over 30 providers. Our staff here at the city was amazing. We were told in other cities permits would take this and take that and just simply no. And in Grover Beach, they just saw the county through the process, and it was a completely reasonable amount of time, and everything just happened. It just came together in like less than a month. So there were 80. We actually had more people show up at our event than showed up at the PASO event. We had 86 wow. people show up and receive services, ranging in age from 1 to 92. Hmm. And just some of the statistics, 8 people signed up that day and got CalFresh food assistance that day. 10 people submitted applications for ID cards. 15 people got checkups and vaccinations. There were countless dogs getting vaccinations, which is good for all of us. 26 people got haircuts. 19 people got showers. There was a shower trailer there from Santa Barbara. 2 people completed housing applications. Many more requested it, but most of the housing offices aren't even taking people on their wait list. So, and actually one veteran was signed up with a job that day. So it was just amazing, and it's something that we hope to do at least once a year. But, you know, for all the people who say the homeless don't want to do anything, they don't want to participate, clearly that's not true, because they came, they signed up for services, they participated appropriately, and it was great. And there was little to no impact on the neighborhood, and the neighbors were all informed, and they were all supportive. So I really can't thank our citizens enough, because that's not a given in most communities. So that's it.
Excellent job, staff.
Very nice.
Very good. Anyone else? No? I don't have any committee reports. Any council communications? Jeff?
I do have just a couple quick items. Obviously, as was mentioned by Kathy Petker at public comment, we have our 9/11 memorial event this Sunday, a 15-year anniversary of that, and if you do come out, we'll take unfortunate bets on who will cry first: our police chief, excuse me, our fire chief, or our mayor. And then two other quick announcements is Fall Cleanup Week is coming September 19th to the 23rd. It is a free event for single-family residential customers. If you do have bulky items, there is potentially some charge there. Other questions, you can direct them towards the South County Sanitation Service at 489-4246. And then one other event sponsored by the Five Cities Homeless Coalition is our Empty Bowls event, which is upcoming on September the 22nd.
Okay.
So at St. Patrick's Catholic Church on Fair Oaks Avenue in Arroyo Grande. Tickets are $25. The event goes from, I believe it's 11:30 until 2, and I have tickets available.
Okay, I'll take 2.
Okay. Very good.
We're good?
I have one thing. I'm hoping that maybe we can have a conversation sometime in the near future regarding for city-funded events, purchasing promotional items and so on from businesses that are located inside our city.
That is a very good topic. Absolutely. I think everyone's in agreement with that. So we'll work with the city manager and admit all the other things we're doing, but
I know.
We'll figure out when. Okay. But
with economic development being high on our list.
Oh, absolutely.
It's something I think we need to have a discussion about. Thank you.
Absolutely. And I would say we add quality of what we're putting out, too.
Absolutely.
But I'm not going to go down that rabbit hole. Miriam, do you have any communication? I think you.
That's my biggest communication.
Okay, very good. City manager, do you have any reports or comments tonight?
Just one quick item. We heard a lot of facts and figures in the last presentation, but at times the vivid stories of how we serve the community are also very, very important. Last week we received a call of a small child wandering in the streets. Sergeant Romina found the 3-year-old boy 8 blocks from his house.
Wow.
Just walking alone on the city streets. And Sergeant Romina walked the little boy back to his house. Sergeant didn't know where the boy lived, but the boy pointed to his house 8 blocks away.
How old was he?
3 years old. 3 years old.
Wow.
So it's a great story of the dedication of our police department and our employees overall in serving the community. And it's a reminder to all of us parents out there. I'm the parent of a toddler, and I know how quickly they can act.
They sure
just
can.
To keep your eyes on your children as much as possible. We're here to help, but certainly do what you can as parents, and we'll all be safer for it.
Glad that was a happy ending. Absolutely.
Wow.
City Attorney, do you have any reports or comments?
Not tonight, other than I will be on vacation next week, and Mr. Hale will be available for any questions or emails.
Very good. So here we come to, actually, the part of the meeting where I must recuse myself from the closed session item that is on the agenda today. This is regarding, I believe this is the one correct regarding Pacific Gas and Electric Company. I am an employee and will be recusing myself. I will hand the gavel to the Mayor Pro Tem, and that concludes my evening. So let me hand this to you.
You don't have to look so happy about it.
Oh, I'm really broken up.
Feel free to leave the snacks. we'll give the mayor a moment to collect his belongings.
In the meantime, it is the intent of the council to meet in closed session on one item, that is potential litigation, and that is the administrative CPUC hearing under Government Code Section 54956.9D.
Very good. And on that, we will recess into closed session.
You guys are letting me leave the room.